habit to start all of our meetings with a prayer, so please join me for a prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we come to you this morning humble for the blessings you've bestowed upon us as a people in our country. None more important than the agricultural industries and the way that we go about the process of feeding ourselves, feeding our families, and feeding the world. We ask our blessings on these men and women in this audience today as they go about their tasks. Lord, we ask this morning that you also be in this room with us, that the words that we say and the way we say them will be respectful, and that we will listen to each other and glean from these conversations the important issues that will help us write a better farm bill than we might have otherwise written. Again, forgive us of the many sins we've committed. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Now I ask Brooks Parrish. Where's Brooks? Brooks is going to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
Please address the flag. Salute. Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
It's now my pleasure to introduce our host, Dr. Fox, the University of Florida. We could not have had a better start to the listening sessions. This is our first one. It is plowing new ground, so to speak, and we were a little anxious about it. The University of Florida, his team, have done an outstanding job. So, Dr. Fox, if you'd like to say a few words to the audience, we'd be happy to hear from you.
Should I do it from here?
Whatever you're comfortable with.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Conaway. Well, welcome to the University of Florida, you all. Indeed, I'm Kent Fox, president of UF. And as one of our nation's great land-grant universities, agriculture is an important part of our history, our present, and more importantly, our future. We are so pleased, indeed, to host the House Committee on Agriculture and this listening session on the next Farm Bill, Conversations in the Field. I'm also so pleased that we have so many friends of agriculture here and participating in this session, including our own congressman from the 3rd District, Representative Ted Yoho. 2 days ago, Professor Jackie Burns, the Dean for Research at our university's Institute for Food and Agriculture Sciences, testified to the committee in Washington, D.C., and it was about the vital role of research in supporting our nation's agriculture. Agriculture is an incredibly important and powerful economic force in our state. It's our nation's third largest state, and indeed, Florida agriculture has a $148 billion economic impact, second only to tourism in the state of Florida. That supports about 1.5 million jobs. Sunshine State agriculture is remarkably diverse. I personally worked at other great land-grant universities, including Cornell in New York, Purdue in the state of Indiana, and the University of Illinois. And in each of those states, we were justifiably proud of our agriculture and the impact on those states. But Florida is unique. In this state, because of the breadth of our crops and commodities, we have over 300 different crops and commodities, from citrus to peppers to snap beans to sugarcane to avocados. This diversity of crops and the commodities depends on sustained and diverse agriculture research and education. As the discovery, innovation, and education arm of Florida agriculture, the University of Florida scientists tackle these challenges every day. They educate our students, and they indeed are the future of agriculture. Our faculty conducted about $140 million in agriculture research this past year, benefiting Florida's crops, livestock, forestry, fisheries, and natural resource systems. About 70% of that research funding was conducted on behalf of the federal agencies, much of it in the form of competitive grants that were provided through the Farm Bill. This federally funded research improves row crops, specialty crops, plant and animal nutrition, rural development, energy crops, sustainable farming, pest and disease management, and indeed tackles the entire spectrum of the issues facing our powerful ag industry. Federal research dollars also help us tackle the vital challenges that are unique to Florida's geography and climate, including invasive pests and diseases that slip so easily through our different ports. Representatives and special guests, Florida agriculturalists, I know we all agree that agriculture is a central pillar of our state's economy and our nation's security and its future. Our university is 110% committed to further strengthening this pillar through our partnership with the federal government and through education, research, and agriculture extension. We're so thankful for your partnership in defining this endeavor, and we appreciate this opportunity to host you at the University of Florida for this listening session as you shape the 2018 our federal government's farm bill. Thank you, and as we say here in Florida, go Gators.
Thank you, Dr. Fox. I appreciate that. This is our very first listening session for the 2018 Farm Bill. We hope to hear from as many of you today as we possibly can. We won't necessarily be able to get to everybody, but we hope to hear as many as we can. We've got not all of the Ag Committee is here this morning, but we do have a good cross-section of members, and I will now ask each member to briefly introduce themselves and talk to you about it. I'm Mike Conaway, Chairman of the Committee. I represent the 11th Congressional District of Texas, dominated by cotton, cattle, sheep, and goats in terms of production agriculture and hunting, because we count that in Texas as an agricultural experience because you do it on the deal. So I am the chairman, and it will be my responsibility to help along with these folks get a 18 Farm Bill written, and we want to hear from you today as to what the 14 Farm Bill, how it's working, and if you've got specific improvements to the Farm Bill that you would like to have considered, they will be. We have a stenographer who's taking this down, so all of the comments will be in the public record and will be available to the committee for its consideration. Now I turn to Dr. Ted Yohu, who actually represents the dirt that we're on right now. So, Ted.
Thank you, Chairman Conaway, and I appreciate everybody being here, and I thank you and the committee for picking Gainesville, Florida for the first listening session. The Farm Bill is coming up, the 2018 Farm Bill, and our goal, and I know the chairman's goal, is to make it pass on the first round, and everybody in this room is involved in agriculture. You're either producing it, you're farming, ranching, or you're consuming it, so we're all involved in agriculture, and I'd like to give a shout-out to Dr. Fox. Thank you, and I thank everybody for being here. Look forward to a great listening session.
I'm Congressman Rick Allen. I'm from the 12th District of Georgia, which includes Augusta. Our main products there in the 12th District are cotton, because you can't have cotton without peanuts and peanuts without cotton. We have the famous Vidalia onion. Of course, Georgia is the number one producer in the country in poultry. We have cattle, and of course, a big product we have now is blueberries, and along with forestry, obviously, is a big area of production for us. So thank you. Glad to be with you here today.
Good morning. My name is Stacy Plaskett. I represent the Virgin Islands of the United States, America's paradise. At one time, the Virgin Islands was considered the breadbasket of the Caribbean. We've lost that title some time ago, but agriculture is alive and well. Most of our crops are vegetables and especially fruits, mangoes, guavas, bananas. We also do some livestock. We have a heat-resistant centipole bull, which is used primarily in South America, Venezuela, and other places. It's like an amped-up Angus. And so we're really interested in the Virgin Islands, in rural development, broadband, and telecommunications to grow the rural communities that support agriculture. Thanks so much, and I'm looking forward to having a little gator later today also.
Yeah. I'm Roger Marshall. I represent the Big First District of Kansas. We're certainly famous for our wheat, but actually the largest producing district of sorghum in the country. And when you put all of our cattle industry together, we're the largest in the country as well, very vertically integrated from cow-calf operations to feedlots to the packing houses as well, and have the fastest-growing dairy herd in the country as well. Excited to be here. Excited to work with Congressman Yoho. He's been a great inspiration for me as a veterinarian, understanding and reaching out in the science. Go Gators.
All right.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jimmy Panetta. I represent the 20th Congressional District in California, the Central Coast of California. We have a number of specialty crops in that area. You name it, we grow it. And that's why, as my fellow members of the committee will tell you, I come from the salad bowl of the world. is what it's called. And so it's wonderful to be here, wonderful to be able to hear from you and see how we can work together with our specialty crops as well as our livestock as we move forward for the 2018 Farm Bill. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Neil Dunn. I represent Florida's 2nd Congressional District. It surrounds this county, Alachua County, on the north, west, and south. And as I look over the audience, I see a great many friends here who are farmers and ranchers. And I think Florida agriculture is very, very well represented here. You know, as we look at this farm bill, we know that the farmers' net income is down 50%, and I think that's the backdrop that we're going to consider as we write the next farm bill. It's so important that we hear from all of you, and I'm so grateful that you're here to share your insights and wisdom with us. I want to thank President Fox and his faculty and his staff and Chairman Conaway for providing this very first option for us to come out and actually listen in the field to the farmers and ranchers who make it all work. So I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much.
My name is Austin Scott. I'm a graduate of the University of Georgia, so the next grant the University of Florida will be for one for a statue for Herschel Walker put in the middle of campus. I represent 24 counties, starting at the Florida line, pretty much running up I-75. Tremendous agricultural district, great people that I have, several of them here, good friends for a long time, long before I became a member of Congress. But I chair the Subcommittee on Commodity Exchanges, Energies, and Credit, and look forward to hearing from you.
Good morning. I'm Sanford Bishop. I represent the 2nd Congressional District of Georgia, which is the southwest quadrant of the state, 29 counties. Alan Boyd would say it's North Florida. I'm glad to be here for this listening session, and I want to thank all of you for coming here today. I am the only appropriator on this panel. I serve as a ranking member of the House Agriculture Appropriations Subcommittee, along with Chairman Robert Adderholt of Alabama. We fund all of the programs in USDA, the federal, the FDA, the CCC, and the Commodities Futures Exchange Commission. So we are actually the ones that write the checks. That makes this inaugural session important to all of us. But of course, it's important to me because agriculture touches every aspect of our lives, as you very well know. Georgia is an agricultural state. We got 42,000 farms, and we contribute $74 billion annually to the Georgian and the national economy. We're number one in the nation in the production of poultry, peanuts, pecans, blueberries, privately owned timberlands, and we're number two in cotton, and we have significant fruit and vegetables. Likewise, the district I represent is very, very heavy in those products. I want to really let you know that we are advocates for American agriculture, not just for Georgia, and that it's important that in this farm bill that we craft a bill that is flexible enough to apply and to help all of the producers in the entire United States. So we are here to make sure, and we want you to help us to make American agriculture strong, which includes sound integrated pest management practices, environmentally resistant, tolerant seed lands, rural business, expanding broadband networks in rural communities, encouraging our new young and veteran communities for the next generation of farmers. And our nutrition programs are vitally important, and of course, you play a very, very vital role in that, but it's also important for national security. Because they tell us, I represent Fort Benning, the trainers are telling us that the bone density in their trainees now is not what it used to be, and they have a lot of stress fractures because the youngsters did not get the kind of nutrition they needed in the school lunch program. So that's extremely important to us, and I look forward to hearing you. We're very pleased that Secretary Perdue, who grew up on a Georgia farm, who was trained as a veterinarian, who was a grain dealer, and who was a former governor of Georgia, is leading our agriculture department, and he is at this point conducting a review of the activities in rural America. And it's important for the next farm bill that we continue to support the desperately needed resources for our rural communities, housing, economic development, infrastructure, and farmland conservation. And with that, I thank you for coming, and I turn it over to my colleagues.
Thank you, sir. Well, good morning, everyone. My name is G.T. Thompson. I represent the Pennsylvania 5th Congressional District, small piece of real estate in the Keystone State, about 24% of the land mass of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, our number one industry is agriculture. One out of every seven Pennsylvanians owe their job directly or indirectly to agriculture. Dairy is our largest commodity, but we grow a lot of that row crop called trees. And forestry is a very important part of our economy. Pretty diverse agriculture area, actually. Proud to have served as a past chair of the Forestry and Conservation Subcommittee chair on this committee, and currently serve as the committee full committee vice chair. And I chair the Nutrition Committee. And I want to thank everybody that's here, because after all, it's the farmers that feed. And your work, your presence here is appreciated today.
Thank you. I'm Rick Crawford from Arkansas's 1st Congressional District. That's the eastern part of the state, and my district produces about half of the U.S. rice crop. And a lot of folks don't know that we grow rice in the United States, and don't realize that we grow it in the abundance that we do in Arkansas. Also, the duck hunting capital of the world, so keep that in mind if you want to travel to my district. We'd love to have you. Again, I just want to echo the comments of the panel here, and thank you all for being here. You could be doing any other work on your farm or spending time with your family, and you've taken time out of your day to come and share your story and your comments and your concerns with us, and we appreciate it, and that will help us to write a better farm bill to better serve those who feed and clothe not only our country but the entire world, in fact.
All right, well, we'll get started here. As Dr. Fox mentioned, Jackie Burns testified in front of us last week. She testified on behalf of IFAS. And I kept thinking, ISIS? What is? Because I had the acronym, said Jack, but Jackie did a great job with the Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences. So thank her for doing that this past week. Dr. Rick Telg will be our moderator. Thank Rick for doing that here in a few moments. And he'll set the stage for what we're going to do in terms of setting those rules. I'll dispense with my opening comments because much of it has already been said by some of the panel members. No need to repeat that. Again, we're here to listen to you, to hear from you what's working and what's not working, and any particular, any specific improvements that you have that you would like to be folded into the next farm bill. Quite frankly, we're going to have hard choices to make. We will have less resources than they had in 14. We won't have direct payments to do away with and be able to harvest that money back into the system. And so they're going to have to set priorities, and we're going to have to make some hard choices. I'm driven to get this thing redone on time. It expires on September 30th of 2018. The decisions to be made in September 18 will not get any easier in October of 18. They're still going to be hard, and we'll have all the information we need. We're just going to have to go ahead and make them. And so part of what I hope to contribute to this issue is to get it done on time, right, wrong, or different. Let the systems know what you're going to have to live with for the following 5 years. The producers, bankers, creditors, implement dealers, everybody should know what the program is going to look like on time. If you like the drama of short-term extensions, expirations, and the threat of permanent law, I hope you have to go to a different theater, because let's just not do that. Like I said, it's not going to get easy in October. It's going to be hard. Let's go ahead and get those done and make that happen. We have our first panel this morning, and the only panel. Then everybody else will just be hopefully good citizens who wanted to come and talk to us. First off, we have Mr. John Hoblick, who's a cut foliage producer from Florida. He represents the Florida Farm Bureau, and he's from Volusia County, Florida, right? And then, of course, Gerald Long, who's a diversified farmer, produces cattle, peanuts, vegetables, corn, cotton, hay, small grains, and timber. And he's the Georgia Farm Bureau president to talk to us for both Florida and Georgia. So, Mr. Hoblick, why don't you begin our first panel this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to present to you comments from Florida Farm Bureau. And as Florida Farm Bureau welcomes this distinguished member panel and the staff of the Agriculture Committee to the Sunshine State, the home of a thriving $148 billion diversified ag sector with over 300 commodities. The state of Florida boasts 47,000 farms and covers over 9.4 million acres, as well as roughly 15 million acres in working timberlands. Furthermore, on behalf of the state's farmers and ranchers, we are honored to host the first listening session for the 2018 Farm Bill discussions. And frankly, given the diversity and the breadth of Florida agriculture, there's no better place to start with this conversation. When we think of the Farm Bill, the traditional crops that come to mind are the corn, soybeans, wheats, peanuts, and cottons, and perhaps a few others. But the traditional crops aren't really what make Florida. They help Florida. We have a significant production in the panhandle of all those traditional crops, but Florida's agriculture landscape comprises of a plethora of crops and commodities that are often forgotten in the context of the Farm Bill. From avocados and tomatoes in the South Florida to Satsuma production in Monticello, from generation-old dairy farms in Okeechobee and experimenting with new crop varieties such as olives, artichokes, citrus alternatives, Florida agriculture cannot be matched in its diversity and uniqueness. Florida Farm Bureau Farm Bill priorities for 2018 supports national farm policy that includes production price and yield loss safety nets, specialty crop block grants, producer-friendly conservation programs, permanent comprehensive disaster relief, and long-term renewable energy benefits. Florida Farm Bureau resolutely calls for a strong, reliable, diverse safety net for agriculture. A solid, comprehensive safety net offers certainty for U.S. producers and mitigates risk responsibility. From 2009 to 2015, $4.6 billion were invested in Florida by way of a variety of Farm Bill programs and initiatives that supported Florida agriculture in hard times. In 2016, $22 million in ag-risk coverage and price loss coverage programs and $94 million in commodity loans to eligible producers who use their crops as collateral. Availability of crop yield and revenue insurance for all producers of crops, along with maintaining current levels of federal funding, would provide needed certainty to Florida producers in these uncertain times. Secondly, a robust conservation funding must remain in the Farm Bill. Florida's natural resources are a part of what makes this state so unique. We all recognize that, but I hope we also recognize that Florida's farmers and ranchers have been indispensable partners in preserving and protecting those resources for generations. From 2009 to 2015, $926 million went to conserve and protect Florida's land, water, and air resources through programs such as EQIP, Conservation Steward Programs, and Conservation Reserve Programs. These vital programs incentivize and reward Florida farmers and ranchers in being responsible stewards of our state's resources. Funding for invasive species and pest diseases prevention is paramount in protecting the integrity of our state and national food production systems. Florida's ports and climate make it particularly susceptible to unwanted pests and diseases from around the world. Recent and current outbreaks of pests and disease in Florida reinforce the need for proactive measures to minimize these outbreaks and also to properly respond and fund in the event of epidemics in the future. In Florida, the recent outbreaks of the Oriental fruit fly in 2015 and screwworm as late as last year posed real threats to the various sectors of our agriculture industry. And the state of Florida remains immensely grateful today for the swift response by federal and state officials which led to those eradications. Citrus greening continues to be an existential problem for Florida's oranges and grapefruits. Revenues have declined by $4.64 billion across the citrus industry over 10 seasons. Citrus greening has also cost the state's $1.76 billion in labor income, with more than 34,000 jobs lost. Simply put, we need to continue to have federal funding to support the eradication of citrus greening through targeted research funding. Florida Farm Bureau supports funding for specialty crop block grant programs. Florida is ranked second in specialty crop production and first in production of value of multiple specialty crop areas such as watermelons, grapefruits, tomatoes, oranges, cucumbers, and snap beans. From 2008 to 2015, Florida received $31.2 million in these funds for 208 projects to enhance competitiveness and profitability in our specialty crop market sector. This includes vital research and marketing promotion dollars. The University of Florida, our gracious host today, has been and continues to be the leading charge, or leading the charge on cutting-edge research that helps our producers remain competitive. Cuts in specialty crop block programs or complete elimination will disadvantage Florida's specialty crop industry and put our growers in an ever more consistent backdrop of current NAFTA failures. Florida Farm Bureau, speaking of NAFTA, supports the renegotiation of NAFTA, the free trade agreement that strengthens and the issues that lie there is that we strengthen and enforce mechanisms to effectively combat illegal dumping and reinforce U.S. commitment to domestic producers. While other parts of the United States have experienced greater market access with increased foreign demand of our agriculture products through this agreement, Florida has indisputably struggled. We have seen dramatic reductions in market share in key Florida specialty crop markets, including tomatoes, strawberries, and bell peppers due to the prolific Mexican dumping into our markets. Free but fair, this has become the hallmark of this administration's trade policy agenda, and Florida agriculture is looking forward to seeing that vision become a reality, specifically for our specialty crop producers. And again, I would be amiss if I didn't mention the H-2A visa program. An insufficient farm labor force, as you well know, continues to plague many ag commodity groups, ranging from dairy to many of our specialty crops in Florida. Reforming our guest worker programs are integral. Florida was number one in certified H-2A labor use in 2016, with 13.8% of that usage being here in Florida, and we could use more. In closing, because of its diversity, Florida agriculture is a resilient group, but it's also fragile. The House Ag Committee must keep this in mind when they craft the 2018 bill. Florida Farm Bureau is confident that the knowledge and the abilities of this committee to effectively address all of these concerns in 2018 Farm Bill, in spite of the tight budgetary times in which we currently live. Florida Farm Bureau is tremendously appreciative of your willingness to travel to our great state and listen to the concerns of these Florida growers today. It shows us that you are committed to getting things done right in this 2018 Farm Bill, and we look forward to being partners in that effort throughout this process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Long.
Chairman Conway and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony regarding the current Farm Bill and the policy needs of Georgia farmers in the next Farm Bill. You said my name is Gerald Long, and I am the president of Georgia Farm Bureau, and it is the state's largest farm organization with over 300,000 member families. Our goal is to be the voice of agriculture in all aspects of a public policy. My wife, Janice, son, Justin, and his wife, Kelly, and I run a diversified family farm in Decatur County, Georgia, which is about 35 miles north of Tallahassee, Florida, and Congressman Bishop is my congressman. Thank you, Congressman, for what you do, okay? I'm a third-generation farmer. Son Justin is the fourth, and our grandson is the fifth. We're just celebrating our centennial year this year, in fact. On that farm, we raise about 600-plus head of commercial cow-calf operation. We grow about 280 acres of peanuts. Normally, we grow about 600 acres of cotton, but due to the price, now we can run cattle and see that we can make a little better profit on cattle than we can on cotton. We still grow some. But we're also sort of unique, and we grow about 50 different varieties of vegetables on 120 acres of what we call a U-pick vegetable operation. Agriculture is the largest industry in Georgia. Is it over a $74 billion economic impact, as Congressman Bishop stated earlier. Agriculture provides 1 in 7 jobs in our state, and we are the leading producer of peanuts, pecans, broilers, blueberries, and pine trees. Mr. Chairman, we're also the nation's number two in cotton, which is very important to us in Georgia, okay? Georgia Farm Bureau is grateful for the work that was done to complete the 2014 Farm Bill, and we want to be a partner in writing the next Farm Bill. It is critical that the next Farm Bill continues to work for all segments of agriculture from all regions of the country. A strong crop insurance program is critical to protect producers from crop losses and weather-related incidents. Just this past year, Georgia suffered from one of the worst droughts in our state's history, as over 75% of Georgia reached severe drought status per the U.S. Drought Monitor. March saw blueberry producers suffer from a devastating freeze that wiped out nearly all the state's blueberry crop. Unseasonably warm weather has caused our peach production to suffer, as farmers are expected to lose upwards of 80% of their crop. Crop insurance will allow most of these businesses to continue for another year, and we urge you to maintain a sound crop insurance program and oppose any efforts to undermine its effectiveness. The next farm bill should maintain the agricultural risk coverage, known as ARC, and price loss coverage, known as PLC programs, as both have been a critical safety net during the current period of low commodity prices. The PLC for peanuts has been effective and should be maintained in its current form. Without this program, many Georgia row crop farmers could not have survived the downturn in the farm economy that we are experiencing. Also, the facts do not support the argument that the peanut program has caused an unhealthy increase in acreage. The supply and demand balance for peanuts is at healthy levels. Early 2017 contracts have been reported in the $475 to $550 per ton range. Exports has also seen a strong growth, with peanut exports increasing by approximately 72% since the 2008 Farm Bill. We support maintaining the PLC program for peanuts at the current reference price, while also continuing the separate payment limits. As many of you know, the Stacked Income Protection Program, known as STACS, for cotton has not worked as anticipated. While we understand changes to the cotton program were needed because of the World Trade Organization case with Brazil, it is critical that cotton be established as a PLC program at an adequate support level in the next Farm Bill. Both cotton and peanuts rely heavily on a properly functioning marketing loan program that helps ensure orderly marketing and flow of these commodities to the market. Maintaining the marketing loan program is a priority to our members. Georgia Farm Bureau is opposed to any further tightening of payment limits and eligibility requirements, as these policies are too restrictive to be competitive and viable in a global market. Conservation programs are extremely popular across our state. The Environmental Quality Incentive Program, the Conservation Stewardship Program, and Conservation Reserve Program are all necessary to give growers the necessary incentives to conserve our resources to ensure better crop productivity while preventing further mandates and regulations. As I mentioned earlier, Georgia suffered from significant drought conditions in 2016. The assistance provided by the Livestock Forage Program, known as LFP, was timely, as it provided necessary feed assistance to counties in drought zones. Despite suffering from significant drought conditions, some counties, including my home county of Decatur, were excluded from LFP despite bordering counties that received LFP assistance. These counties were in rural areas where few, if any, weather stations are available to judge climate conditions. As the 2018 Farm Bill is written, we urge you to reauthorize LFP with the necessary changes to address this challenge. One suggestion is to allow counties contiguous to a D3 county to be eligible for LFP, like USDA secretarial declarations. This would allow farmers in these counties to receive much needed assistance while also giving producers a more reliable method of achieving eligibility. Again, thank you for the honor to provide testimony here today. I'll be glad to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thanks, gentlemen. I appreciate that. Does either of my Florida or Georgia colleagues want to have a quick question of our presenters? Anyone? Okay, Ted.
Just real quick, on the specialty crops, do you see a need to bring them into the insurance program quicker, or a way to do that?
Yeah, I believe that there are needs for specialty crops. They're not titled in any of the programs and listed. And, you know, the closest we can get is NAP. And NAP is not a complete whole policy for us. That it does help us with the overall you can minimize some of your losses with the NAP program, but there are specifics in NAP that exclude certain crops or exclude certain parts of production that need to be adjusted. If you need me to expand further on that, I can.
For time's sake, I'll talk to you when I get back.
Okay.
Again, gentlemen, thank you very much for presenting this morning and representing both Georgia and Florida Farm Bureaus. We're now going to the part of the section that listens to Real Producer. We've asked Dr. Ricky Telg, who's a professor of agriculture education and communication and the director of Center for Public Issues Education here at the University of Florida, to be our moderator. And with that, Dr. Telg, set the ground rules.
All right. Thank you so much, Chairman Conaway. As the director for the Center for Public Issues Education and Agriculture and Natural Resources, also called the PI Center, our mission is to work with our citizens here in the state of Florida to inform and engage them about important issues related to agriculture and natural resources. So when asked to moderate today, I was thrilled at this opportunity. I may have the most coveted position here today because I'm the one to keep us all on time. And knowing some of you in this room the way that I do from the Florida ag industry, I have my time, my work cut out for me, I'm sure. So you were given a information card as you came in. I have a stack of cards here of those already completed. If you would like to complete one, please kind of catch the eye of one of the staff members along the aisle here, and we will add this to the list that we have. Please limit your time to 2 minutes, your comments to 2 minutes. At 2 minutes, I will gently say 2 minutes, which means please conclude your remarks. At 2:20, I will say a little more firmly, please conclude your remarks. If at necessary at 2:40, I will make a head nod to the staff, and you might find your personal space a little bit invaded. So please do try to stay to 2 minutes. Really, the bottom line is to be courteous of all those around us today. You can discuss as many farm bill-related topics as you would like within your 2 minutes. You're not limited to just one topic. If you have more comments that you would like to make, please email those to houseaglistens@mail.house.gov. And so what I will do is I will call the first two individuals up for comments. Please go to the microphone that is closest to you. After the first person speaks, I'll call two more people up to kind of keep the flow going. But please do not start your comments until I call you by name. Okay, does that make sense for everybody? Okay. So the first two individuals, Greg Hodges and David Norton, if you could come up to one of the microphones and we'll begin. Greg Hodges, please. Greg, go ahead, and Greg, if you would start, please.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate this opportunity to come up here today, and I represent the... Thank you so much. I represent the Florida Department of Agriculture, the Division of Plant Industry, and I couldn't help but hear the comments from our Farm Bureau. And I hate to say it, I wasn't ready to come talk to you just yet, but I want to stress the importance and the need for continued research for exotic pests. So that's the big thing for Florida.
Okay. David Norton.
First of all, Congressman, let me just echo the comments of my president and welcome each of you here to Gainesville. Congressman Yoho, hello again. I represent the University of Florida and our research mission, and we're quite proud to have the privilege of supporting industries like the agriculture and livestock here in the state of Florida and across the country. Like many of our institutions, we take a great deal of pride in that and like that mission. What I just want to touch base on is a particular policy change that's being proposed at Office of Management Budget that, quite frankly, will completely cripple the abilities of universities to carry out research. Congressman Dunn, you mentioned this during the testimony on Thursday, and this is the proposed 10% cap that's being pushed forward by OMB, currently being considered for HHS. This 10% cap is on the overhead or F&A charges that universities can do. To just reach the bottom line, it will completely cripple universities in Florida and every single state to do your research. And the reason is very simple. And I spoke to Congressman Yoho on Thursday about this. We have research. So research at universities costs a certain amount of money. There are two pots. One is the pot for direct charges of things in the laboratory. And then there are other things around the laboratory that we have to have in place. At University of Florida, I know that for every $2 I spend in the lab, I spend $1 for activities outside the lab, for air conditioning, for accountants to track the money, for fiscal oversight, for all those things. I know this number because the federal government comes in and evaluates that number every 3 years, so a very intense process. So for every, I know how much my research costs, and that's what I charge the government. Under the, so for me, it's a rate of 52%, 52.5%. The current proposal from OMB would take that 52.5 for the University of Florida and cap it artificially at 10, which means that the University of Florida would be forced to sell $3 worth of research to the federal government and only get back $2.20. Now, you don't have to have an MBA from Harvard to know that that business model is not going to work, and that will be detrimental to all universities and the research they would do for any federal agency. Our real concern is that apparently this can be done without your consent. OMB can simply decide and is currently considering this seriously too. It will cripple universities like the University of Florida to support communities like the ag industry. And I really ask and implore you to take a look at this. I'm happy to answer any questions now or offline. It's a really serious issue for every single university, whether it's in California, Arkansas, Georgia. It's a serious issue.
Thank you very much. Okay. Next two individuals, Sonny Davis and Robin Safley. And as you're coming forward, please, as you speak, make your comments, please speak into the microphones.
Yeah, get real close to the mic. That way everybody can hear, because you can hear me pretty well, but we can hardly hear you. So get real close.
Sonny Davis. All
right. Good morning. A little bit about our farm over in the Panhandle, Florida, in Congressman Dunn's district, way over. And our primary crops are cotton, peanuts, cattle, some soybeans. So we're kind of diversified. My mother was really blessed. She had five boys, no girls. I see all four of my brothers practically every day. I've got nephews. I got a son back on the farm. So it is. I'm grateful that your first stop for this listening session is in Florida and giving us the opportunity to comment. You know, for the last 5 years, market returns, and I'm speaking on cotton primarily, but, you know, the returns of cotton and cottonseed have fallen real short of what it costs to produce it. When accounting for the minimum federal farm policy support provided for the cotton during the last 5 years, you know, it's dropped below cost of production. So it's tough on the farm. So it's imperative that we have a comprehensive cotton support that is on par with other commodities in the Title I of the next farm bill. As I mentioned, our family farm, like many others across the cotton belt, cannot withstand any further tightening of policy that are already too burdensome, restrictive in light of the scale of production of agriculture to be competitive, you know, in today's market, which is worldwide. And some perspective on that. This will be my 46th crop. And like I say, we do peanuts. I sold peanuts at a higher price, you know, in my first crop than I'm receiving today. Cotton was on par, but corn and grains, we're still dealing with that same market. The only way agriculture has been sustainable is virtue of size and efficiencies. And to do that, it takes a lot of money to do it. And, you know, agriculture has contributed a lot to the economy of this country by virtue of the commodity prices still being in line back then?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. I'm done?
That would be it. Yes.
I want to thank y'all for allowing me to come make the comment. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. The next individuals will be Don Kaler and Roger Davis.
Mr. Robin, Chairman, yes. And Robin. Committee, thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm the executive director, there you go, of Feeding Florida, which is affiliated with Feeding America, and we represent 14 member food banks throughout the state, work with about 2,500 agencies, partner agencies. So the programs I want to talk to you about today is, well, I want to talk about the clients we serve. So there was an ALIS report done by the United Way of Florida, which identified that 29% of Floridians work and make above the poverty level, but don't make enough to really survive. So those are the clients that we're seeing on a day-in and day-out basis. And we know that hunger is a health issue. So nutrition is imperative. So three of the programs I want to talk to you about is the Specialty Crop Grant. We worked closely with the Florida Fruit and Vegetable Association, and with some seed money from that grant, we worked with growers, helping get product out of the field that otherwise would not make it in the supply chain. So we helped defray the pick and pack costs for that grower, and then they can take a donation. It's working really, really well. We've grown the program. There's still more to be done. I think there's a lot of that. I think that's the future of what we can do. We will have, by the end of June, we'll have this past year sourced 20 million pounds of produce that goes through our network to those people in need. The other program that's very, very important to us is the TFAP program. It's a stabilizer. It represents probably 10 to 15% of the produce or the shelf-stable product that we work with. But the most important part of that is distribution and making sure that it's fully funded. I think last farm bill we got about $59 million throughout the nation to help subsidize the distribution transportation costs. And that's really only represents about 24% of the cost. So I would encourage you to fully fund that. And obviously, as it relates to SNAP, we would encourage no cuts to SNAP. Any cuts to SNAP would really put a pressure on the charitable response, and so we would encourage that. Thank you.
Thank you. Don Kaler.
Mr. Chairman, Congressman Bishop, Scott, and Allen. Hey, great to have you Georgia guys here. These guys represent almost half the U.S. peanut crop, so we appreciate what you do. Congressman Yoho, I'm glad your weather's better than I had it when I had you in my district, because we got really wet that day. I'm Don Kaler. I'm the executive director of the Georgia Peanut Commission. I've been there for 31 years. You know, today you might hear from others that the peanut program's not working. You may hear concerns that some farmers have better advantage, but the peanut program works for everybody. We've got stability. We've had growth. We're selling more peanuts. We don't have an oversupply. Last year, we forfeited 62 tons of peanuts in the loan program. So that tells you there's not an oversupply problem. You know, I wish everybody, we have farmers that have land that they've cleared in every one of our Georgia districts. I wish we could have more base, but I understand the fiscal responsibility that we're looking at. But I also know that I hear from farmers right now that they're not paying back all their operating notes. And we've got a 50% reduction in net farm income. You've got a tough task writing a farm bill with baseline spending and trying to find a way to fix the problems of American agriculture, and I understand that. But the thing that I would ask is that you remember that we have farmers all across this country growing peanuts that depend on the program the way it is. You hit a home run. You wrote the right program in the last farm bill. Twice since 2002, there's been an opportunity for farmers to either buy base or to shift base from one commodity to another. And I think those are grand opportunities. But the thing that we certainly would hope is that as you go through the process of this, you remember that the program we have is working, and don't take the attitude that some folks have a goat and others don't and decide to kill the goat. Keep the goat. Let's get more goats.
Thank you. Thank you. Roger Davis and Robert Taylor. Okay. So is it Roger? Robert, okay.
Roger, that's not like you.
And then Ben Evans, if you can come to the microphone as well. Next. Go ahead. Robert.
Yes, I'm Robert Taylor, Dean of the College of Agriculture and Food Sciences at Florida A&M University. And I'm a Tuskegee graduate and a master's and PhD from Michigan State, soil microbiology and soil chemistry. And I'm here to talk about our crumbling infrastructure in terms of our laboratories, etc. You know, Sunny Ramaswamy said that if you wanted to do the most updated genomics work with the latest equipment, you had to go to Beijing, because we don't have those kind of facilities in our laboratories, in our colleges especially. I just recently, I was invited by the Institute of Zoology, Chinese Academy of Sciences. I just came back from there. We're studying invasive weevils throughout the world, and it's true. They have so much more equipment. I mean, on the Chinese Academy of Sciences, I saw them buildings, 7-8-story buildings. And when you go into buildings, they're full of equipment, people working. So when I think of Florida A&M, when I think of, I worked for 30 years at Alabama A&M University, and when I think of the equipment, and I visited 1862 schools, I see the same problem. We need, just like our highways and infrastructure, you know, we need better laboratories, more money spent on our facilities if we are to make the breakthroughs that are needed for 2050 as we feed the world in food. Thank you. Thank you.
Ben Evans.
My name's Ben Evans. I'm a cotton ginner from Douglas, Georgia. I'm Vice President of Coffee County Gin Company. I'm part of a fourth generation business and also a cotton farmer as well. Cotton farmers have been struggling, and not only the effects of the farmers, but also all the cotton infrastructure. As gins and warehouses are closed due to depressed prices, less acres, there's been a tremendous burden on those communities, often rural communities where they're located. Loss of jobs equates to loss of tax revenue for those local communities. I implore the community to do whatever is necessary to include an adequate safety net for all commodities, especially cotton, to help our rural communities thrive and survive. Given the tremendous reliance on our industry on exports of raw cotton and fiber and yarn, it is essential that the U.S. agriculture industry have a strong, well-funded public-private partnership to help leverage private resources to expand export markets and grow demand for U.S. agricultural products. A central part of this effort is USDA's Market Access Program and Foreign Market Development Program. Even though the U.S. continues to be heavily outspent by our other major agricultural producing exporting countries, funding for MAP and FMD has not increased in more than a decade. MAP and FMD have resulted in a $2.1 billion increase per year in cash farm income since 2002. Agricultural exports in 2014 accounted for $340 billion in economic output and supported 1.1 million jobs. This reason, I believe, has justified the new farm bill to invest in additional funds in these programs. The value of U.S. cotton fiber exports exceeds $5 billion annually, along with an additional $3 billion in exports of value-added cotton textile products. Independent studies have found that for each dollar spent by organizations that partner with USDA, like Cotton Council International, to promote and expand exports, there's a $35 return on investment. In direct monetary and in-kind contributions, the U.S. cotton industry invests over $2 for every $1 of MAP funds utilized for export promotion activities.
2 minutes.
Thank you for all you do for the cotton industry and American agriculture.
Thank you. Next two speakers will be Larry Black and Virginia Sanchez.
Ben, before you step down, one thing that's come up is obviously we're writing the farm bill this fall. Well, then it's not implemented, Chairman, until 2000, when? October of 18. How do we get from here to there? And I know one of the problems we've got in the industry is if we lose our gins, we're basically out of business.
Yes.
Yes, just talk to your colleagues in the Mid-South, and what's happened is there is those people have transitioned out of cotton into corn and soybeans. They've lost their infrastructure. So even if we can't just flip a switch and get it all back. So those people that want to grow those crops in there are severely limited by the capacity to handle that.
Well, that's what I want my colleagues to hear, is that we've got to do something to get us to, and we got to do something in the next farm bill, but we got to do something. How about the gin sharing program? Is that?
That worked fantastic.
Okay.
Fantastic for our growers. Yes, absolutely. We'll take any help you can send our way. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Good to see you.
Larry Black.
Good morning, Chairman Conway and Congressman. Thank you for seeking input from the field to ensure the 2018 Farm Bill addresses the needs of today's agricultural producers. My family settled in Central Florida in the 1850s and soon started growing citrus. I'm proud to be a member of the fifth generation of our family to produce Florida's signature crop. Our company employs over 170 Floridians to grow, harvest, and pack our crops. Our industry has suffered due to an invasive pest and bacterial disease. Honglongbing, HLB, or citrus greening, is a bacterial disease spread by a vector, the Asian citrus psyllid. HLB has seriously impacted citrus industries throughout the world. It attacks the vascular system of the tree, severely reducing yields and eventually rendering the tree unproductive. HLB was first found in Florida in 2005, and spread of the disease was exponential, devastating our groves and production. The vector and the disease are also found in Texas and California. Those industries are threatened as well. We have a national citrus crisis. Florida citrus plantings exceeded 850,000 acres, and we produced over 300 million boxes of oranges, grapefruit, and tangerines at our 1998 peak. We are now down to about 80 million boxes and 500,000 acres. The decrease is primarily due to HLB. We've lost packing houses, juice plants, and other businesses in the supply chain. The processing plants that remain are running below capacity. University of Florida economists have estimated since 2011, HLB has cost our industry $1 billion in lost economic activity and over 30,000 jobs. The future of the Florida citrus and California citrus industries is in the hands of the research scientists. Early HLB detection, psyllid management, and plant improvement for both conventional breeding and engineered resistance are important areas of focus of research. What can Congress do? First, it is imperative the next Farm Bill include an extension of the Citrus Disease Research and Development Trust Fund, which was created by the 2014 Farm Bill.
2 minutes.
The Trust Fund has funded critical research that offer long-term solutions to citrus greening and hope for our industry. More time and funding is needed for scientists to develop sustainable solutions to address the HLB crisis. Thank you.
Thank you. Virginia Sanchez. It's been
4 years. Chairman Conway and other members of Congress, thank you for visiting our home here in Florida. My name is Virginia Sanchez, and my family and I operate a row crop farm here in North Central Florida, as well as a peanut buying point. I would like to tell you a short story about three farmers created out of the 2014 Farm Bill. These three farmers are neighbors. They go to church together, they hunt together, and their kids play ball together. It's the first day of peanut planting. The farmer to the west tells his wife, "Well, I'm going to start planting today, even though peanut prices are very low. We have base and qualify for a PLC payment. We will be okay. The government is providing us a safety net." The farmer in the middle tells his wife, "I'm starting to plant today, and I'm worried sick because of low prices. We don't have any base and don't qualify for the PLC payment. All we can hope for is that somewhere, somehow, there's a shortage of peanuts this year, and prices will go up. He says, "I'm really worried. We've got peanut equipment and land payments. Our employees and their families are depending on us. He prays his situation turns around soon." Now the farmer to the east, he's sitting on his front porch, and he tells his wife, "What, I don't think I'll plant peanuts this year. We've got base, and we qualify for a $250,000 PLC payment regardless if I plant or not. We don't have any land payments. I paid our land off when the government bought out my peanut quota in 2002. I think I just won't hire any employees, buy any equipment, fuel, fertilizer, or supplies. We'll just pocket the $250,000 this year. The farmer in the middle is also being attacked by his neighbors because he's speaking out against a program that does not work for him, his family, or his employees. The base holders don't want their program touched. He knows they would be doing the same thing if they were in his shoes. He's being called a troublemaker and a rebel by his neighbors. Their long-term friendships have been deeply damaged. Notice I didn't say what state these three farmers live in, because these three farmers live in every peanut-producing state in the U.S. The 2014 Farm Bill has created the haves, the have-nots, and the ones that don't have to do anything.
2 minutes.
As a member of Congress, I want each of you to know that my family and I thank you for your commitment, sacrifice, and courage to serve this country. As you begin writing the new 2018 Farm Bill, I pray God gives you the wisdom and the guidance to develop a peanut farm policy that treats every hard-working peanut producer the same. I humbly ask you to remember the farmer in the middle. Thank you, and God bless each one of you.
Thank you. Next speakers, Jane Walker and Jim Handley.
Good morning. Thank you for being here in our beautiful state. My name is Jane Walker. I work for Daystar Life Center. I run Daystar Life Center. I've been feeding and taking care of people in poverty in Pinellas County for 38 years since I graduated from Florida State. I had to get that one in there.
Okay.
I've seen a lot over the years as far as things that work and things that don't work. But I'm going to read you a story. First, I'm going to tell you what this man that who wrote this looks like. He's 6'3", 50 years old, well built, not overweight, not flabby, and looks like he could still, you know, run the football field. This is his letter. To whom it may concern, SNAP. What does it mean to me? I am 50 years old and disabled on a fixed income of $735 a month, living with only $35 a month left over to eat. In addition, I get SNAP benefits. If I did not get these SNAP benefits, I would be hungry and in the hospital several times a month due to being malnourished. I am a diabetic, take insulin 3 times a day, and suffer from severe blood clots, ulcers, arthritis, and other illnesses that require a high-protein diet. The SNAP benefits allow me to keep my health balanced and out of the hospital. Along with the SNAP benefits, I also have to supplement going to food pantries monthly, and that includes the food from the TFAP program. These are folks coming in every day. I have a booklet that we did in interviewing some of our clients. It's called Putting a Face to Hunger, that I will be happy to share with all of you. Congressman Bishop mentioned the school food program not being malnourished. I don't know if you are not having enough nutrition. That school food program started during World War II because the people going into the military were malnourished. So it took it basically an act of war to start feeding people. But the food school service does not feed these kids on weekends. It does not feed the elderly. It does not feed everybody. I just wanted you to know that what works, you asked what works. SNAP works. It's a leading program for reducing poverty and keeping people out of poverty, out of the hospital. It benefits farmers and ranchers, grocers and retailers, for the overall economy, but most importantly, for those who are hungry in our land of plenty. Thank you. I know you have a lot of work ahead, but our folks need to eat. Thanks.
Thank you.
Ms. Walker, if afterwards, if you could get me a copy of, you know, whatever you have in terms of that book or document, as chair of the Nutrition Subcommittee, that would be greatly appreciated.
Okay.
We'll make sure that gets shared, too.
Thank you very much. Thanks for caring.
Next speaker is Jim Handley.
Good morning.
Chairman Conaway, members of Congress, thank you for being here and coming to Florida and joining us in our great state. I'm Ken Griner, Usher Land and Timber, Chief in Florida, President of the Florida Cattlemen's Association. A few hours now, anyway. So Jim will back clean up here, but I'll make a few remarks. And I guess my son, we're in the cattle and timber business, my son, if we can keep a little fuel in the tractor and air in the tires, he'll be the seventh generation. I was sitting at a meeting here with Jim and some of the people in this room this week, and a friend of mine named Alex John sent a note across to me because we were talking about sustainability, and his definition of sustainability was, what is it that I can do for your benefit at my expense today? So we need a strong title in this thing as far as our conservation and equip, where our equip programs have got to be strong, and we appreciate that. At the same time, I'd be remiss in the timber business not to mention that. Don't let these things be so restrictive in your definition of what species and number of stems per acre that we have to plant that you rule out sustainability.
Right.
Somebody's got to pay the bills. So we need a strong research, you know, and an ability. You've got the university here. We depend on IFAS for all the benefits that benefit all of society. Without them, we can't make those improvements and the efficiencies that we need to compete everywhere. And with that, I'll turn it over to Jim.
Get about 45 seconds.
Thank you very much. Out of respect for your time, I greatly appreciate it. I'm Jim Hanley, the Executive Vice President of the Florida Cattlemen's Association. We really appreciate you all coming to Florida. One particular item that I want to make sure and mention is that something we're asking for in the Farm Bill is to create a foot and mouth disease vaccine bank. We're asking our appropriators, Mr. Bishop and our other fellows from Florida and Congressman Diaz-Balart and Congressman Rooney to work with you to create this. You've seen the devastation of citrus greening, and we're such a position, a screwworm that came to Florida. Our industry is very susceptible to a huge, huge, huge devastating problem if we don't think ahead and buy this insurance in advance. And we're hoping that you can support the creation of this foot and mouth disease vaccine bank. We appreciate your time. We know you're going to hear a lot of comments. We'll come back with more if there's time later in the session today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As I call the next two individuals, please remember if you have other comments that you would like to put your comments forward on a card or by email, please do so. Kelly J. Philman and Stephen Leone.
I'd like to thank you guys for hearing me today. And I'm Kelly Philman. I represent 83 farms and 25 employees and partners. And again, I'm proud to be part of the Florida peanut industry. And I'm going to speak from the heart. I want to tell you a few stories. When I used to ride the school bus, I would, some 25 years ago, I would kind of think about what I want to do. And I have some vivid images in my mind. I can remember one farmer. I watched what they were doing, shelling corn. I wondered how they did it. But it wasn't long. The dad took a job at REA, and the son went to work with the state. I hate to use the word poor, but some 25 years ago, our area, we didn't have many choices. We could log, work with the state, or farm. And many times after I made the decision to farm 25 years ago, the next 10 years, I questioned that decision. I questioned it many times. But we were blessed, and along came the Farm Bill. And under the 2002 Farm Bill provisions, we were afforded an opportunity in our area to grow and harvest peanuts. So in 2002, I grew and harvested 300 acres of peanuts. And from there, the businesses grew. And today, we tend to 10,000 plus acres. Not by choice. That's a lot of risk. But under the provisions of the 2014 Farm Bill, we've had to increase acres to be sustainable. And
it's 2 minutes.
You go 40 to 80 miles west of here, there's millions of dollars of industry, peanut industry. And what's on my mind is the 16 children that are from 2 years old to seven. 16 children, they're hanging out them truck windows on Saturday afternoon. They're watching what we're doing. They're wanting to rake a little hay. They're wanting to pull some weeds out of them peanuts. But under the provisions that we have faced with the Farm Bill, we won't have a future if we stay under these same provisions. And that's what I'm asking for you to consider, the next generation. The next generation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
Sir, before you go back, you said that's not your choice. What would be your choice if you could have your brothers?
Thank you for your question. I tell you, it's hard to explain your livelihood in 2 minutes. I prayed about it. I prayed about it this morning. I had 5 or 6 minutes. But let me clarify that for you. Any good peanut farmer will tell you, you know, that for us, 7,500 acres is a better manageable number in our budget. But when the prices get low because of overplanting, which was a result of a Farm Bill provision, which some won't agree with me, but prior to that, we had a market system in place from 2002 to 2013. Where the markets took care of itself, just it balanced. And so by choice, we're having to overwork just to be sustainable and make our bills.
Thank you so much.
Steve. Thank you, Chairman Conaway. My name is Stephen Leong, and I'm the Associate Dean for Research at Florida Agricultural and Mechanical University. I've been at that university for almost 30 years, and I've seen a lot of things that the university has been doing to really not only help the country, but in particular helping the citizens of Florida. Florida A&M University is actually one of the 19 land-grant universities that we have in this nation, and we specialize, I would say, in helping those marginalized citizens or farmers in this state here. And over the years, we have done a tremendous amount of work helping not only farmers, but as well as residents in the rural areas and in urban areas. I'm talking about the proposed so-called budget cut that has been mentioned in several media, I would say, to the USDA, in particular about the 20% or 21% budget cut. In particular, I would say $386 million cut in the research budget. We feel that it will have a significant impact, especially to the not only the 1890 universities, but also to all the 1862 universities as well, because at Florida A&M University, our research, I would say about 90% of the research funds that we get are from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And we feel that if there are any significant cuts to that agency, then it will trickle down and that we will be affected, not only our research, but also our extension and outreach activities. I would say that 100% of our extension and outreach activities dependent on the USDA funding or formula fund. So I would like to suggest that when the 2018 Farm Bill is put together, that the committee recognizes the importance of Florida A&M University and all the other 1890 institutions for the work that they are doing to help the marginalized, the under-resourced farmers and the citizens of Florida. Thank you.
Next speakers will be Joe Wright and Donnell Gwynn.
I'm Joe Wright. I'm a dairy farmer from Hardy County. Tom Rooney's my congressman, and he's a good one.
two issues, margin protection program and farm labor. Margin protection program, in the era of the renewable fuel standards, it's the right program. But the haircut it was given because of CBO scoring makes the program completely worthless. It's that simple. Labor. I've been president of our dairy cooperative, Southeast Milk, for 20 years. I've been going to Washington, D.C. for over 10 years begging for some kind of immigration worker program for dairy, and we don't have one. My plea is to, on an emergency basis, make us eligible for H-2A. Wasn't originally designed for dairy. We'll make it work. There's a sheep herder's exemption for H-2A. Let us have it. Let us have something, anything. Beg the administration to do administratively, and whatever piece of legislation you can find to tack H-2A on, make dairy eligible. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Donnell Gwynn.
Can you speak at the mic?
My name is Donnell Gwynn. I was raised on an 80-acre farm. And I have grew that to 2,000 acres over with the 2002 Farm Bill. After the government passed the Freedom to Farm Act and the peanut quota was bought out, the Freedom to Farm Act of 2002 gave farmers like me the opportunity and ability to grow peanuts and compete in the world's market. After much thought, I, along with many farmers in this room, have invested in growing peanuts. This industry, especially here in North Central Florida. Since the 2014 Farm Bill and the generic base provision went into effect, price of peanuts have fallen, increased in peanut production. I ask this committee help me and other farmers like me to give me my non-based neighbors the same opportunity as other successful farmers and my neighbors. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm a little bit nervous.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next two speakers, John Barber and then Mike, I apologize if I get Brunorton, the president of the Georgia Fruit and Vegetable Growers Association. I apologize if I couldn't quite read the last name. So, John Barber, and then Mike.
Good morning, Congressman, and thank you all for coming to the wonderful University of Florida and traveling here. My name is John Barber, and I'm a fifth generation citrus grower. We've been in business since the 1920s, and we've just recently expanded into blueberries. HLB and the Asian citrus psyllid are not native to the United States. Though we are not sure how HLB and the Asian citrus psyllid got here, we do know that it was first discovered in the Miami-Dade area in 2005, which means it probably came through our ports. Other non-native diseases are no further away than a non-stop flight. Of the 67 counties in the state, citrus has grown in 27, and a study just released by the University of Florida titled Economic Contributions of the Florida Citrus Industry in 2015-2016, it estimated the total contributions of our industry at $8.6 billion, supports 45,000 full and part-time jobs, and total federal, state, and local tax contributions of $818 million. While the citrus acreage and crop size has decreased significantly since HLB infection, we still have over 435,000 acres of bearing citrus in the state. We may be down, but we're far from out. Florida's unique climate allows us to grow the best quality citrus products in the world, but our industry is at a crossroads, and the future depends on research. It is a matter of national security that the United States of America has a safe, sufficient, and reliable agricultural food supply and to not lose our farms to foreign pests, disease, or competition. So what can you do for the Florida citrus industry and its survivability? First, it is imperative that the next farm bill include an extension of the Citrus Disease Research and Development Trust Fund, which was created in the 2014 Farm Bill. While a long-term solution is being developed through research, the citrus industry needs incentives for growers that will mitigate some risk and prompt them to invest and replant their groves.
2 minutes.
The USDA Tree Assistance Program helps in doing this, so please reauthorize the program under the next Farm Bill, and thank you for being here and your service.
Chairman Conway, members of the committee, and distinguished guests, I'm Mike Brewerton, Director of Agricultural Operations for Superior Berries Company in Fargo, Georgia. At Superior Berries, we manage several operations, including 500 acres of blueberries and over 1,800 hives of pollinators. I come to you today as president of the Georgia Fruit and Vegetable Growers Association and representing over 500 fruit and vegetable growers in Georgia and throughout the Southeast. I want to thank you, Chairman Conway, for holding one of your listening sessions in the Southeast. Our Southeastern agriculture is much different from our farming brothers and sisters in the Midwest and in the Pacific Coast. We appreciate you being here to hear our comments. There are a number of areas and programs in the Farm Bill that provide tremendous support for our Southeastern growers. Of particular interest to our members and specialty crop growers is research. The Specialty Crop Research Initiative, or SCRI, is a very important component of the Farm Bill funding. Research for specialty crops is growing in importance. This growth will likely accelerate over the life of the next Farm Bill based on needs from our growers and our industry. Reports from the USDA show nearly 25% of the specialty crop block grants awards have been directed to research projects over the past 5 years. During this Farm Bill cycle, the effective funds available for specialty crop projects in SCRI has peaked at $55 million per year when the citrus greening research commitment is excluded. We are most appreciative of these funds and their support of research. However, the specialty crop industry has been historically underserved by the various general research governmental programs. Over the next 5 years, we know there will be a need for more funds to provide needed research into automation, mechanization, and also related harvest efficiency technologies to ease our lack of labor. We know food safety research will be a high priority area, so the new FSMA regulations can be based on sound science. We ask that you increase the level of funding for the Specialty Crop Research Initiative.
2 minutes.
It is needed to keep our industry competitive and consumers supplied with fresh fruits and vegetables. In closing, I want to thank this committee for following our industry's recommendations for the 2013 Farm Bill and establish a formal relevancy review panel as required criteria in awarding the research grants. This process worked extremely well and has ensured projects funded that are critical to the industry. On behalf of the Southeastern Fruit and Vegetable Growers and the Georgia Fruit and Vegetable Growers Association, I want to thank you for holding this listening session. Thank you so much.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Briefly. Sir, those are the same issues we have on the West Coast, so we're with you.
Thanks, sir.
The next two individuals will be Carl Zimmer and Marty Mesh.
Good morning. I'm Carl Zimmer from Douglas, Georgia, and I'm also president and CEO of Premium Peanut. And what is Premium Peanut? And I think it's important to hear about this story. It's a peanut sheller. We've been in operation for a year. And we're formed by a group of investors who came together about two years ago and said, we need to create more value out of our peanut crop. Let's take the matter into our own hands. And they did that. And so over the past 2 years, we spent $50 million and built the largest peanut shelling facility in the world. And that's in Douglas, Georgia. And now we just announced another $14 million investment. We're going to go into the peanut oil business. Because with all the peanuts we grow in this country, we're still a net importer of oil. So we see an opportunity, and we're making the investment, and we're creating jobs, and we're going to expand. What's important about this, in my view, as I said, a group of investors came together. Those investors are 237 peanut farmers. I work for growers. I didn't grow up on a farm. I'm not a farmer. My wife is, which we joke about that. I'm the city boy, and she's the country girl, and we sort of swapped roles here. But as a group of peanut farmers who came together and put up their money to create value, and they're doing it, and we're doing it. And part of why we can do that is because of the stability that this farm bill has offered. They know they have that safety net if you're a peanut grower and you're a peanut farmer. It has worked. It is working. I believe it will continue to work. Because, you know, when I came into the industry, somebody told me there's no such thing as too many peanuts. I said, well, wait a second. You know, there could be. Well, you know what? I've come around to his way of thinking. I don't think there is such thing as too many peanuts. We can create markets. We can take action. We are selling peanuts into 15 countries around the world. And as part of our expansion, I want more. So we've opened up the company again. We said, if you're interested in buying stock and premium peanut and getting a good, fair price every year for your product,
2 minutes,
and getting more value for it, come on in. Because we believe there's opportunity out there. We believe there's market for U.S. peanuts. We can use more. Let's do it. Let's continue to create those markets, create that value. And I believe it's because of the stability that the current Farm Bill has provided in the peanut program. Let's continue it.
Thank you. And that's in the 12th District of Georgia, folks. Thank you, Carl.
I'm Marty Mesh, the Executive Director of Florida Organic Growers, a nonprofit we established in 1987. I personally started growing organically in 73. FOG provides education and outreach to farmers and consumers, as well as operates an accredited certification program. We collaborate in organic research and other types of education projects. As the largest certifier on the Eastern Seaboard, we certify operations nationally and internationally in all scopes. FOG also operates a statewide FINNE-funded project, potentially benefiting all Florida direct market growers and SNAP users, and has a long history, has been a long leader in widely recognized food system improvement projects. You all have heard the numbers. That organic is a $75 billion global market, the fastest growing sector of agriculture since 1990. The organic industry has provided a viable economic opportunity for many farmers who otherwise may have gone out of business amongst declining commodity prices and farm consolidation. Organic has provided an entryway for many young and beginning farmers. For the state of Florida, it's resulted in over 450 organic businesses, and with real investment, with adequate investment, that number would be a lot higher, and the return on investment would be quite impressive, as you know. Organic certification cost share program is a vital program, especially for many of these beginning and family scale farmers. Organic's a voluntary program, a program that provides uniform and consistent standards in order to meet consumer expectations. We need adequate authority, accountability, and resources for the NOP. This is necessary to keep pace with the growing demand and to develop standards and carry out compliance and enforcement actions in the U.S. and abroad. Organic increased funding for research research on production methods is critical. Support for ORI will ensure that organic farmers can continue to meet the unique challenges they face and farmers are interested to have good research to base decisions on as they explore the possibility of doing organic production.
2 minutes.
UF has received over $4 million in funding to conduct organic research, including several grants funded through ORI that have been critical to the success of Florida organic farming. This at a university that told me years ago that growing organic blueberries in Florida was just not possible. Now, a few miles from here, there's over 200 acres of organic blueberries. UF offers a degree program originating from a small initial SARE grant that FOG received and wrote and implemented. We also have the opportunity in this farm bill to facilitate transition to organic by improving access to land and capital and investment in infrastructure and targeted technical assistance.
Please wrap up your comments.
Existing USDA conservation, rural development, and other potential programs such as transitional certification can encourage it. It's way past time to adequately invest resources in the fastest growing segment of the agriculture, providing multiple benefits. Thanks for your opportunity. I'll email more substantive comments to the committee and which will deal with specialty crop, SERI, nutrition titles, conservation titles, rural development, etc. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you. Next speakers will be Brooks Parrish and Victoria Hunter Gibney.
I'm going to hold it. It's okay. First off, I'd just like to thank you, the committee, for coming to Florida. It's an honor to have you in our home state, and it's just a blessing to have you right close to home. Congress, you seems just the other day you were coming to my house to do health certificates, take care of my show steers, and it's just great to see you here again. I'm Brooks Parrish, and I'm from the town of Trenton, just across the way, and I am currently at the College of Santa Fe College here in Gainesville, where I plan to transfer to University of Florida to study plant genetics. In 2015-2016, I served as the Florida FFA state president, and I'm here today to have some remarks on behalf of the Florida FFA and National FFA organization. Founded in 1928, the National FFA organization is an integral part of the agriculture education by helping make classroom instruction come to life through realistic, hands-on application. FFA members embrace concepts taught in agriculture education classrooms and build valuable skills through experiential learning. FFA has responded to expanded opportunities available in agriculture, and it's time to hire skills and competent employees. According to the National Institute of Food and Agriculture Education at the United States Department of Agriculture, an estimated 57,900 high-skilled jobs in the United States agriculture sector will be open annually in the next 5 years. But there will only be 35,400 new United States graduates to fill these positions, resulting in an annual shortfall in 22,500 agriculture professions. That's where we all come in. Our nation's investment in American agriculture and youth who will pursue that enterprise and crucial to feeding the world, building a sound economy, maintaining a healthy labor market, and protecting our homeland. Now more than ever, we need sound legislation that considers the future of agriculturalists as much as it considers our current needs for strong safety nets and nutrition programs. We need policy that encourages students to return to the farm or pursue agriculture careers that support them in doing so, and legislation that equips youth serving organizations to prepare the next generation of agriculturalists, regardless of their race, color, religion, gender, or disability.
2 minutes.
As the 115th Congress works to advance agriculture priorities, and as your bodies work to reauthorize the Farm Bill, we hope that you consider the next generation of agriculturalists in your decisions. On behalf of the Florida FFA Association and the National FFA Organization, I thank you for your time here today and wish you the best of luck in creating the Farm Bill.
But young man, thank you for being here. And in terms, since you've taken up agriculture as a future career, can you tell us or speak personally about what you believe would drive young people into the field of agriculture and agribusiness, and from your personal experience, so we can take that into our mind?
Yes, ma'am, most definitely. So as I've grown up on a family farm, growing watermelons, Costa Maria de Pay. I've been engulfed in agriculture, but traveling the state in my year as a state officer, I've come to realize that many students coming through the education system see agriculture as it was saw in the past. It's just cows, sows, and plows. Farmers, all they do is go ride a tractor all day. They don't make any money. Why do I want to do that? They're engulfed by the help field. They see dollar signs, and that's where they want to go. I feel that to get more students involved in agriculture and to choose an agriculture career, it starts as us promoting it as not just this one simple part of American jobs. It's everything around us. It's from promoting seed, creating the seed that's going to be planted in the ground, to actually being the farmer, creating the crop, harvesting that crop, and then the sales of that crop. There are so many different parts of the agriculture community, and most of the students in the American education system aren't seeing these entire parts. I feel it's our job as promote the agriculture industry as a whole rather than just a farmer sitting on the farm growing the crops. While they are a vital process, there are other pieces to the puzzle that these students could be engaged in. So really promoting the entire experience of agriculture to each student in that education system, as well as promoting agriculture education for students to be engaged and learn about the agriculture education.
Thank you, Chairman Conaway and the committee for making the trip down to Gainesville, and welcome Congressman Yoho back to Gainesville and the University of Florida. My name is Victoria Hunter Gibney. I'm here on behalf of the UF IFAS, not IFAS, ISIS, Family Nutrition Program, which implements SNAP Ed for the state of Florida. As others have shared, Florida's agriculture is a fantastic industry. We have a breadth and depth of products that we put out, but despite this, the 2015 study found that about 17% of Floridians, including over a million children, still struggle with hunger. And protecting and strengthening our nation's nutrition safety net services, including SNAP, is really key to making that connection between what our growers are offering and what our citizens can afford and be able to purchase for their families. SNAP Education, or SNAP Ed, is the nutrition promotion and obesity prevention component, as you all know. And as in many states, SNAP Ed in Florida benefits from being integrated into our cooperative extension network, as well as our impact is magnified by a number of partnerships we have at the local, state, and national level, including Feeding Florida, including Florida Organic Growers, the Florida Department of Ag, and Consumer Services. And really, we benefit from all of those partnerships, as well as being part of extension. The Family Nutrition Program, we really work to empower Florida families to lead healthier, more productive lives through getting the skills and education they need to make healthy choices for their families. We work with youth and adults. One thing that I kind of want to echo what Mr. Parrish mentioned about exciting young people about agriculture, we support community and school gardens across the state. And I've personally seen young students who never knew what the food that they ate, you know, at the end product looked like growing out of the ground, and it really excited something in them to understand more about where their food comes from and who it's coming from and get connected to our growers. And we've seen a lot of interest grow in our schools from that aspect.
2 minutes.
Thank you. Lastly, I just want to say that SNAP Ed, particularly in our rural communities, is very, very important. We don't have a lot of nutrition programs like FNP, a family nutrition program, in our rural areas. And that's usually where the need to address food insecurity and chronic diseases is greatest. Thank you all for your consideration. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. The next two speakers will be Danny Johns and Amy Stone.
Good morning. My name is Danny Johns of Blue Sky Farms in Hastings. I'm speaking to you this morning as a fourth-generation potato farmer in Florida, as representative of the Florida Fruit and Vegetable Association, and I also serve on the National Potato Council. We would like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak on the importance of the upcoming Farm Bill for American Agriculture. The Farm Bill includes important provisions that address top concerns of the specialty crop sector, including threats from diseases and pests, providing for vital research capabilities, marketing assistance, expanding nutrition opportunities, conservation, and other horticultural priorities. As growers, we are constantly challenged to do more with less to feed an ever-growing world population. Some of the specific programs of the current Farm Bill that have proved vital in helping growers to meet this challenge and the many others we face on a daily basis are the Specialty Crop Block Grants, Specialty Crop Research Initiative, the Plant Disease Management and Disaster Prevention Program, MAP Marketing Assistance Program, technical assistance for specialty crops, and others. Research is crucial to continuing to allow growers to provide our country with the safest, cheapest food supply in the world. One thing I've learned in my 40 years, four decades of farming is that one constant I face is change. The Specialty Crop Block Grants and Specialty Crop Research Initiative have been instrumental on pressing needs such as research, marketing, nutrition, extension, food safety. The pest and disease challenge are a constant threat to producers nationally, but particularly in Florida, where a vast system of ports and climate makes us vulnerable. Florida's citrus industry has suffered incredible losses in acreage from the HLB citrus greening. That's why the Farm Bill's pest and disease programs are vital in protecting our industry from this constant threat. These are some examples of the Farm Bill programs that are working to meet the diverse, unique challenge of Florida fruit and vegetable producers. To that end, FFVA President Mike Stewart and National Potato Council CEO John Keeling who both co-chair the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance, are collaborating with industry colleagues from around the country to review and assess these vital programs to ensure they are tailored to most effectively strengthen and sustain fruit and vegetable production in this nation. I had the pleasure to sit down with Congressman Yoho for breakfast a few months ago, and while the issue du jour was crop insurance, when Ted asked me what was the biggest problem on my farm today, and that was my answer to him was labor. There is a critical shortage of legally authorized and experienced workers available. We don't have the workers we need to produce and harvest our crops. It hurts our competitiveness, our local economies, and jobs. It is essential to have a workable guest worker program in place before implementing E-Verify or similar enforcement-only approaches. The negative impact on Florida agriculture and our country's consumers would run into the billions of dollars. Although our nation grows the highest quality produce in the world and can compete in a fair market, global marketplace, the current unfair trade environment with Mexico has drastically harmed many specialty crop producers, including the potato industry. It is estimated that the current NAFTA agreement costs Florida agriculture industry $1 to $3 billion annually. Fresh potato exports to Mexico are limited to 13 kilometers along our border. With one in every five rows of potatoes planted in the United States going to export, this barrier needs to be addressed as the process of renegotiating NAFTA begins.
Okay, please wrap up your comments.
Our industry understands change well. My great-grandfather was the first farmer in Florida to trade his mule in for a tractor, citing increased efficiencies. It is important we continue advances in innovation and competitiveness. Those values are at the core of the specialty crop provisions of the Farm Bill. We appreciate the opportunity to speak to y'all, and it's great to be in the country we are. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny.
Sorry, I'm short. I'm just going to hold it. I'm Amy Stone. I'm with the National Aquaculture Association. I'm a board member with the National Aquaculture Association. A little bit of my background, grew up on a row crop farm in Indiana, graduated from Purdue University, worked as a fish farmer for many years in the 90s, and then went over to sales, mostly because the farms were not well supported. I'm now the owner and operator of Aquatic Equipment and Design, which is a small business selling into this industry, hoping to make it better. I have four main points that I want to go over with you. One is that the U.S. aquaculture, or that U.S. aquaculture be designated as a specialty crop. I'll go back and reach this in a minute. The other is that we support continued funding for the Agriculture Research Service and NEPA. We also want to continue the Food Safety and Inspection Service, and then also modify and update the National Aquaculture Act of 1980. Those are my four talking points. These will also be emailed in greater detail. It's very important to us that we, as aquaculture producers in the United States, be considered a specialty crop because it allows us to get specialty crop block grants and to be equally included in the Farm Service Agency for Disaster Assistance Programs, as well as the research service. I know you've heard many, many things about research and how important it is in the industry, but is extremely important in aquaculture, which is an emerging market in the United States. And as you know, we import more seafood than we can grow in the United States. However, there is an uptick in large farms coming into the United States, 3 in the state of Florida, 2 in the state of Wisconsin, and several around the United States, which can change that and change the tide. We have 5 regional aquaculture centers and the Harry K. Dupree Stuttgart Aquaculture Research Center, which are at risk of losing their funding if we don't continue to fund the Agriculture Research Service. An independent study analysis published within the last 30 days supported a 37-fold return for each aquaculture research dollar spent since 2000. That's huge. We're able to make big strides with this research money that is given to us.
2 minutes.
It's also been very important for us to continue this inspection service on foreign products coming into the United States. And as you know, our market went down when Bossa catfish was allowed to come in from Vietnam. It's important that we continue to do that inspection and require these importers to follow our rules and regulations. And again, we need to update the National Aquaculture Act of 1980. To create an economic development initiative similar to the other countries that are doing this well. Thank you for your time, and I really appreciate it.
The next individuals to speak would be Derek Thomas and Chuck Bohack. Derek Thomas and Chuck Bohack.
Mr. Chairman, committee, thank you for the opportunity. Welcome to Gainesville. My name is Derek Thomas. I'm the Director of Member and Public Relations with Clay Electric Cooperative. We're a not-for-profit electric utility. We serve over 175,000 members in 14 Northeast Florida counties, to include Congressional Districts 2, 3, 5, 6, and 10. Florida Electric Cooperative served nearly 2 million members in 53 of Florida's 67 counties. Electric cooperatives remain committed to delivering electricity to our members and to improving the quality of life in the communities that we serve. For over 75 years, electric cooperatives like Clay Electric have been actively involved in our communities and in economic development. The Farm Bill is very important to our members and our mission because it contains tools electric cooperatives use to strengthen and modernize our grid and also improve our communities. The RUS program is a great example of a private-public partnership. The RUS program is a loan and underwriting program makes it possible for electric cooperatives to provide safe, reliable, and affordable electricity to approximately 42 million Americans. Additionally, the Rural Economic Development Loan and Grant Program is another tool that aids rural economic and community development activities. Our neighboring electric co-op just to the west in Suwanee County in 2016 used this program to build a public library, as just one example locally. We humbly request that you continue supporting these programs and other important programs that support electric cooperatives and the members we serve. Thank you for the opportunity to share this information with you today.
Hello, my name is Chuck Bohack. I'm from St. Petersburg. I'm the state chairman for Ducks Unlimited in Florida. DU is the largest waterfowl conservation organization in the world with over a million supporters. I represent approximately 15,000 dedicated members across our great state. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of DU. The Florida Farm Bill is a signal of support to the rural communities of America. Our country depends on privately owned farms, ranches, and forests for its wood, for its food, fiber, water, and wildlife. We thank you for standing up for the rural America and the core values of agriculture and conservation. The two are undoubtedly connected because we strongly believe that America's farmers, ranchers, forests, landowners, and sportsmen and women are our greatest conservationists. The Farm Bill is a key mechanism to maintain this agriculture conservation connection, and we hope this Farm Bill continues this strong tradition. Passage of the last Farm Bill required coalition building, compromise, and consensus among a broad diversity of groups and regions. Since then, we have worked harder than ever to strengthen these partnerships with farmers, ranchers, and other conservation partners. DU looks forward to working with you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Yoho, Representative Dunn, and the other members of the committee to sustain Florida's natural resources. Thank you for coming to Florida.
Thank you. Next individuals to speak, Jib Davidson and Dusty Hawley. Jib Davidson and Dusty Hawley.
My first, get close to the microphone, she said. Man, 2 hours, we into this thing, aren't we? My name is Jib Davidson. I'm a certified forester, land manager, and a timber producer here in North Florida and South Georgia. I represent the Florida Society of American Foresters, as well as the Florida Forestry Association. Florida Forestry Association represents foresters, as well as landowners, timber producers, and the mills. Did y'all hear about Palatka and what happened at Georgia Pacific yesterday? I mean, they announced, Congressman Yoho, how much money was that they announced?
$400
million. $400 million investment in one little old mill that's going to generate 80 jobs. I mention the mills because it all starts with planting a tree. We don't plant a tree, We don't produce the timber for the mills that generate so many jobs. And y'all have farm bill that in that farm bill is all about some planting tree programs. And I would like to just address the EQIP program for a moment, because y'all know it can take up to 18 months just to get approved on that, Jewel. And that 18 months, you do not necessarily follow the forestry cycles. All agriculture, there's a time to plant, there's a time to fertilize, there's a time to weed. And what happens when you're out of sync on the EQIP program? Well, it gets approved, but you're not in that little old window. So last fall, because we were required to do something, we had to do something, we went to a farm that we had that qualified for EQIP to plow fire lines because we didn't need them, we didn't want them, no one had to have them, but the farm bill says you got to do something in 2016, so we plowed fire lines to make sure we qualified. So my suggestion is, if we can work on that farm bill, we can select the correct species, not just longleaf. We love longleaf, but there's other pine species that work for different landowner objectives. And if we can adjust the stocking rates. A lot of these programs, you're limited to how many trees you plant, which is not necessarily in the landowner's best interest or anyone else's along that whole chain up there to the mills.
2 minutes.
And then you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, that you got limited resources coming up and we got some financial issues. You might think, I don't know if there's a possibility we can work into a public-private partnership, get more of these responsibilities put into the private sector. I think there might be some good ways of saving some money, getting the public-private partnerships going in forestry, because the opportunity's there. Finally, I think Mr. Ryan has said that he's going to create a tax policy. He wants to do something with that. I realize y'all don't have anything to do with taxes. I realize the House Ways and Means Committee does, but pay attention to the federal tax implications, because that's a real important part of our whole ag program. Thank you, now.
It's good to see everybody. I left D.C. in February 12th, and dang it if y'all didn't find me finally. So, but it's good to have y'all in the great state of Florida. And Dr. Marshall, I know us at Florida Cattlemen's was glad to have you here, as our friends at the Kansas Livestock Association are. So we appreciate you getting on this committee and doing good work, because a whole lot of our cattle end up in your district out there. So they just started. So I'll be brief real quick, but welcome to Gainesville. Thanks for coming. I'm Dusty Holly, Florida Cattlemen Association. Jim and our president, Ken Griner, hit some points earlier, but we wanted to add in a couple of things real quick. One, we're looking for that foot and mouth disease bank. We really do need that. We're pushing to move forward. Programs like EQIP and LFP have been very beneficial to the cattle industry. But outside of that, we don't need too much out of a farm bill. But we ask that you tell some of your other colleagues and those in administration just to watch out for any burdensome regulations that might come down on us. We in the cattle industry generally do pretty well if folks just get out of our way. And so we always like it when that's the case. Sometimes we need a little bit of help, but generally we can move on pretty good. So just let those folks know that we're here to do what we can and continue to bring a safe and wholesome food supply, and that's really all we want to do. And protect the environment while we're doing it. So thank you all very much, and hope you all have a good short trip to Florida. Thank you.
Thanks, Dustin.
Yes.
Charles Thomas and Ken Barton.
Chairman Conaway, members of the committee, thank you for your presence here today and for the opportunity to share these comments with you. My name is Ken Barton. I'm the executive director of the Florida Peanut Producers Association, the largest and oldest peanut grower organization in the state. And also, I'm a farmer in Holmes County, Florida. I grow peanuts, cotton, and corn in a 50-50 partnership with my son. And we support the peanut provisions in the 2014 Farm Bill. I planted my first crop in 1980, and peanuts have always been a mainstay on my farm. I don't plant peanuts just for the peanut program. My planting decisions are based on market prices and crop rotational needs on my farm, not just the peanut program. Peanut acreage has been going up in the U.S. and around the world because of increased demand. In fact, the demand for peanuts in the U.S. and the world actually exceeds the supply right now. Peanuts have seen a continued per capita consumer growth for years, jumping from 6.4 pounds to 7.4 pounds per capita use over the past 4 years, according to USDA. The current market price being offered for the 2017 peanut crop also confirms that the reference price in the peanut program does not dictate planting decisions. With increased demand and consumption worldwide, economists predict there will be no forfeitures for the 2017 crop, which means there will be no PLC payment and no cost to the government. Since the reference price is set for a five-year period by the Farm Bill system, which the system promotes stability during both times of prosperity and of the economic downturn, it gives me confidence that I will be able to pass my farm down to my children and grandchildren one day. Chairman Conaway and committee, thank you again for bringing the listening session to Florida.
I'm Charles Thomas, and I grew up just west of here. I'm a timber farmer, and I serve on the board of the Farm Credit of Florida, where we finance farmers. The gentleman from the Timber Association kind of took care of one of my questions, was from the standpoint of in Florida, and it could be a Florida requirement. Florida seems to like the longleaf pine over slash pine if you're going to get any assistance. And I would say that timber farmers, the assistance that we get are pretty small in regard to what we spend overall. So it's not like they're financing all of the crop. But anyhow, they do a good job with what they do. But from the Farm Credit of Florida standpoint, you can see that it's a challenge to finance all of these folks' issues here. It's a great group of people, and it provides some good challenges. But we stand up and meet those challenges. But I would say that to be able to provide that financing, the crop insurance is a good part of financing an operation. It does help assist in getting the initial investment back for the farmer and would put them to another year. Also, the crop loans, you know, in regard to the corn and different things that they need, it also provides an important part of allowing them to be able to manage their operation. And then there's, of course, someone mentioned the regulations. You know, as far as a farm credit finances farmers only. So regulations and things that come in to inhibit what we do, and our money source is called the GSE, which we don't need to get into all of that, but a protection of our government service entity status to guarantee a source of funds for farm credit so that we can farm all the farmers. And Mr. Gwynn might have said he was a little nervous. We do up here. But Mr. Gwynn is a great farmer from Suwannee County.
Next speakers be Kent Fountain and Adam Litch.
Thank you for being here today. And I'm Kent Fountain, and I'm a producer of cotton and peanuts, and have Southeastern Gin and Peanut in Cerency, Georgia. And the chairman of Premium Peanut in Douglas, Georgia. And we appreciate y'all being here, and we really appreciate our Georgia congressional members. And Mr. Allen's right, Premium Peanut's in his district, and Mr. Scott, we've got several of our owners are in your district, and we appreciate it. You know, I'm going to speak on cotton today because, as someone said before, cotton and peanuts are very much tied in our area. With cotton, we've got several issues. The biggest issue we have is losing Title IX. When we lost Title IX, we've eroded our equity and increased dramatically our debt. We need to get back into Title I, and we need to have a safety net for cotton that we can get back to where we were. The prices have come up, but now we see that you looked at it last week, we've lost 11 cents. So we've got to have a safety net.
We had Stacks. Stacks has not worked, as you well know, like we thought it would. With the lower prices, it was not advantageous for people to take it out. We've only had 25% participation in Stacks for cotton acres. So that program didn't work, so we need a safety net like we had before with either lint and cottonseed. Also, on a positive note, though, the crop insurance we have is really does work. We've got 96% of our cotton acres are either in catastrophic or multi peril. So that works. We need to continue that program and continue the crop insurance that we have now. And I appreciate you listening to me, and anything we can do, we appreciate it.
Pull this out of here, maybe. Good afternoon, I think it officially is now. Chairman Conaway, members of the committee, and other distinguished guests, we appreciate you guys coming here to Florida to visit with us today. My name's Adam Litch. I'm the operations manager and managing partner of L&M Farms. I've been 2 hours without a sip of water here, too, so apologize. We farm over 9,000 acres of specialty crop fruits and vegetables in Florida and throughout Georgia. We're a member of the United Fresh Produce Association. I serve on the United Fresh Grower Shipper Board, so I'm here today to represent them. The specialty crop industry is united to advocate for a common set of priorities for the 2018 Farm Bill. A broad coalition of specialty crop organizations known as the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance, representing U.S. growers and shippers, have been working to develop common objectives across regions, commodities, and other interests. I'd like to elaborate on two in particular of the Alliance's top priorities, one being nutrition. A key nutrition program is the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Snack Program, which will feed more than 4 million low-income elementary school children nationwide this coming year. This highly effective program should be continued. Invasive pest and disease. The specialty crop industry continues to support actions by the federal government to eradicate and protect our domestic market from increasing threat of exotic pests and diseases from entering the country. The plea for this protection could not be any stronger than from here in the state of Florida, as we are under constant relentless pressure from invasive pests through our vast port system. We believe Congress should continue these important programs and build on the success of the last 10 years. While the specialty crop industry is very appreciative of all the support Congress has given initiatives important to our sector, the value of these programs will be severely undermined if we cannot secure a dedicated skilled workforce. Simply put, Americans will not do our jobs, which means we must rely on foreign labor. The only federal program for agricultural guest workers, H-2A, barely functions now. We currently use the H-2A program to secure workers in both Georgia and Florida, so I know firsthand how burdensome and painstaking of a process it is, but right now it's our only option.
2 minutes.
I know in agricultural policy at the forefront, oh, excuse me, I know immigration policy is not at this committee's forefront, but we need industry leaders in agricultural policy pressing Congress to take action on immigration needs immediately for our critical labor needs. Thank you for coming to visit us here in the Southeast and for the opportunity to highlight some of the top priorities for the specialty crop industry and the upcoming Farm Bill reauthorization. Thank you.
Speaking to the immigration policy, I have introduced a bill in the United States Congress called the Barn Act to move the H-2A program from the Department of Labor to the Department of Agriculture.
Correct.
And we're in meetings now with Chairman Goodlatte of the Judiciary. We are going to see some enforcement immigration legislation coming to the floor. We're in discussions right now about how to make this thing work and how to get it done. I just thought I'd give you that update.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you.
The next individual to speak, Harold Browning, and then Brian Zielinski.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Harold Browning, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Florida Citrus Research and Development Foundation. In this role, I also assist with coordination between the Florida Citrus Research Programs and the Farm Bill Citrus Disease Research and Education Program. I've been involved in citrus research for 36 years. HLB, as you've heard, is a devastating disease, and there are no effective management programs for this disease. Since its introduction into Florida in 2005, more research effort has been focused on this disease in Florida than anywhere else in the world. Great strides have been made in understanding the elements of this disease, and together with deployment of all the latest biological and genetic tools, many solutions are being constructed and field tested. Research conducted in Florida, most notably by University of Florida IFA scientists, has focused on a number of key targets for intervention. Improved management of the vector insect, creation of HLB-resistant citrus plants, bactericides and other therapies, and modified intensive systems to foster earlier citrus production. Florida growers and our partners have invested heavily to bring us to this point. Importantly, the congressional commitment to HLB research has provided much-needed resources and direction, and in bringing national priority to this problem has attracted a new body of talented scientists from across the country. For these reasons, the CRDF and the Florida citrus industry communicate to Congress how important it is that the next Farm Bill include an extension of the Citrus Disease Research and Development Program. This continuation will lead to sustainable solutions. Thank you for your time and commitment and for allowing me to testify on behalf of the industry today.
Thanks.
Good afternoon, Chairman Conaway and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today. I'm Brian Zielinski, Director of Conservation Operations for the Eastern Region for the National Wild Turkey Federation. NWETF is a national nonprofit wildlife conservation organization dedicated to the conservation of the wild turkey and the preservation of our hunting heritage. We are currently nearly 8,000 members strong in Florida, inclusive of approximately 60 local chapters and our state chapter that serve to deliver on our initiative to save the habitat, save the hunt. Due to our many great partnerships throughout the state, we are able to conserve or enhance 60,000 acres of habitat each year while also opening thousands of acres to hunting access. NWETF is grateful for this committee's focus on conservation and forestry. We have worked with the committee for years to make the working lands conservation programs better, and we have many successes to share. One of the biggest is the increase of enrolled forestry acres in the EQIP program, thanks to the committee changing the criteria 2 farm bills ago. Another is the inclusion in the last farm bill of permanent end result stewardship contracting authorities. For those who may not be familiar, stewardship contracting is essentially where stakeholders collaborate towards a consensus plan to harvest timber from either national forests or Bureau of Land Management properties that adhere to existing forest management plans. Revenue generated from these harvests, along with matching partner funds, is then put back on the ground to do forest restoration and wildlife management work. And for NWETF, it's been very successful, so much so that we're currently the 18th largest purchaser of federal timber. Finally, I'd be remiss if we did not mention your support for the flexibility provided to NRCS to implement their working lands for wildlife program, especially for longleaf pine initiative. This program has created significant habitat for many game, non-game, and threatened and endangered species. None would have happened without this committee's efforts. For the 2008 Farm Bill, NWETF is again a steering committee member of the Forest in the Farm Bill Coalition. NWETF priorities for the 2018 Farm Bill include continued landscape-scale wildlife and habitat management, continue to improve mid-contract management on forested CRP acres to require proper thinning, prescribed fire, and other management, funding incentives for this management at $10 million annually, explore and implement further incentives for forest plan design by collaboratives, including enhanced use of categorical exclusions as allowed by NEPA, administered under CEQ rule and policy. Update payment limits on forestry and conservation programs so larger tracts could be enrolled in programs that meet priority landscape scale conservation objectives. And reauthorize the following programs: Environmental Quality Incentives Program, with a continued emphasis on the Wildlife Habitat Incentive Program practices, Healthy Forest Reserve Program, and Regional Conservation Partnership Program. NWETF enjoys a successful partnership with the U.S. Forest Service and the Natural Resources Conservation Service, as well as state forestry and fish and wildlife agencies. Farm Bill authorities and programs are critical to these partnerships and our collective conservation efforts to save the habitat, save the hunt.
Please be wrapping up your comments.
The benefits provided through the Farm Bill to numerous wildlife species, their habitats, and forest health are matched with economic benefits from the use of forest timber resource and recreational opportunities that support vibrant local economies. We request that the next Farm Bill continue this emphasis. Thanks for your time today.
Brian, when did you say you were going to be hosting the committee to the field hearings with the NWETF?
Give me some dates.
The next individuals, Caleb Bristow and Keith Shaw. Caleb Bristow and Keith Shaw.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Caleb Bristow, and I grew up on a family farm in Columbia, Alabama, which is in southeast Alabama. After graduating from Auburn University, where I received 2 degrees in agriculture, I am now serving as the executive director of the Alabama Peanut Producers Association, representing all the peanut producers in the state of Alabama. As I have had the opportunity to visit with the peanut growers across Alabama over the past few years, I find that many farmers are in a position much like I see on my father's farm. They are predominantly dry land, and thus they rely primarily on a peanut and cotton rotation. That leaves these growers in a vulnerable position year in and year out. As I've talked with these growers, I hear a common message from all of them. That message is, the peanut program is what has kept me in business. One of the main points I would like to make today is that we do not have an oversupply of peanuts in the pipeline. There's actually talk within the industry that there may not be enough peanuts to satisfy the demand of some shellers until the 2017 peanut crop is harvested this fall. With this short supply, we also continue to see the demand for our crop grow rapidly. Based on USDA data, as mentioned earlier, per capita peanut consumption has grown from 6.4 pounds in 2012 to 7.4 pounds in 2016. In addition to the increase in consumption, we also continue to see an increase in exports of both peanuts as well as peanut butter. So demand is up both domestically and globally. We've been able to meet this increased demand because of the certainty we get from the peanut program. This again reinforces the value of the peanut program. This increase is also one reason that this program, while providing stability to farmers, is not projected to cost taxpayers as we go into the 2017 crop. As demand grows, remember, pressure on peanut farmers to expand grows as well. We can only meet the long-term need with the planting and loans that our farmers are able to secure, in part because of the peanut program. I'm certain you all understand how the program works to support farmers during economic downturns, and I'm fairly certain you understand how the program sets a price floor and does not cost the government when demand is high.
2 minutes.
Hopefully my comments today help you understand the value the program delivers to meet the growing demand while continuing to keep our farmers in business. Thank you.
War Eagle.
War Eagle, that's right.
Oh, God.
Chairman Conway, members of the committee, good morning, or good afternoon now. Thank you for the opportunity to provide my comments about priorities for the next Farm Bill. My name is Keith Shaw, and I'm the Vice President of Mayo Fertilizer, a third-generation, family-owned, full-service ag supply business based in North Florida. I'm also here this afternoon, to represent the TFI, the Fertilizer Institute, and the Florida Fertilizer and Ag Chem Association, which I sit on the board. Today I'm going to talk about fertilizer and nutrient management as it relates to the Farm Bill. Fertilizer is a key ingredient in feeding a growing global population, which is expected to surpass 9.7 billion people by the year 2050. In fact, half of all food grown around the world today is made possible through the use of fertilizer. Here in the great state of Florida, the fertilizer industry supports nearly 54,000 jobs and contributes nearly $18 billion to the economy. The fertilizer industry is leading the way in the development and implementation of new technologies and science-based nutrient management programs for sustainable agricultural cropping systems to better meet social, environmental, and economic goals. The interest and commitment of our industry to researching, designing, and implementing these systems is demonstrating through 4R nutrient stewardship, which means choosing the right fertilizer source to apply at the right rate, at the right time, and at the right place. Additionally, the creation of the 4R Research Fund, a 5-year, $7 million commitment from industry, has provided much-needed resources to measure and document the positive economic, social, and environmental impacts of 4R nutrient stewardship. As you begin to craft the next Farm Bill, I would urge the members of this committee to ensure that farmers are provided with adequate funding under the conservation title to implement 4R nutrient management practices. The 4Rs are currently incorporated by the USDA Natural Resource Conservation Service in their 590 Nutrient Management Practice Standard, as well as the Conservation Stewardship Program. EQIP is also a source of funding for these practices. While we recognize that budgets are tight and the new money is hard to come by, placing a priority on funding or incentives for farmers to implement nutrient management practices should be something the committee considers in the next Farm Bill.
2 minutes.
Additionally, in order to make sure we can measure and document the positive impacts of 4R nutrient stewardship, I would urge the committee to provide funding for nutrient management research within the research title of the next Farm Bill. Thank you for the opportunity to provide these comments about our priorities in the next Farm Bill. I look forward to working with you and the members of the committee to ensure a successful reauthorization of the Farm Bill.
Next individual is John Skidmore, and I apologize if I mispronounced the last name here, Joe Botifoud from Sylvania, Georgia. So John Skidmore and Joe Botifoud from Georgia.
Chairman Conaway, committee members and staff, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for allowing me to speak briefly on behalf of Florida Tropical Fish Farmers. My name is John Skidmore. I'm the president of Florida Tropical Fish Farmers Association, as well as the owner of Golden Pond Tropicals. I'd also like to mention 30 years ago, Chairman Conaway, that I worked on a shrimp farm just north of Midland, Texas. But my point there is there are aquaculture operations across the U.S. We don't get mentioned much, but I'm here today to discuss that. Our association supports the continued funding of USDA's IFAS Aquatic Animal Health Program, and we would like to request that staffing to the program be increased by one full-time employee. This increase is needed in order to fully implement the commercial aquaculture health program standards, respond to emerging and existing pathogen threats, as well as to reduce the nationwide shortage of private practice veterinarians who assist fish and shellfish farmers. Although the Aquatic Animal Health Program is relatively new to USDA, it has been essential in assisting farmers to solve a variety of problems, including the management and treatment of some very complex diseases. But as of right now, we only have one veterinarian providing services to the entire United States. Our association also supports the continued funding of USDA's Wildlife Damage Management Program, which works directly with farmers to prevent bird predation on fish. Currently, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act protects a variety of birds which feed on catfish, hybrid striped bass, and ornamental fish. Because all of these fish are raised by our farmers, a funding reduction to the USDA Wildlife Services places at risk the very successful federal program which responds to and effectively assists U.S. aquaculture to prevent damage caused to their crops by these federally protected birds. Once again, I'd like to thank you for allowing me to speak, and we'll provide more information by email. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Conaway and other members of the committee. I am Joe Botiford from Sylvania, Georgia, which is 1 hour south of Augusta. So I get the opportunity to vote for Representative Allen. He's doing us a great job. But I consider all of you to be my representatives in Congress because you have chosen to serve on the Agricultural Committee. And always remember, there is no more important committee than the Committee of Agriculture.
That's right.
Thank you. I'm a third-generation farmer. My son's going to be the fourth generation. This is my 44th crop year. I started sharecropping 400 acres with my father in 1974, and I had 14 acres of peanut quota. Now my son and I farm approximately 2,400 acres of cotton, corn, and peanuts. Growing peanuts is a tough business, but the price loss coverage program in the 2014 Farm Bill, what we call the peanut program, gives farmers across the entire peanut belt from Virginia to New Mexico the security we need to make investments and stay afloat. Peanuts aren't publicly traded. The price is determined long after investments are made, and a few shellers who are responsible for processing the peanuts really hold all the cards regarding what they'll pay for our crop. So the peanut program gives us some negotiating leverage with the shellers. It's a vital program that truly works. It is also because of the peanut program that the price of peanuts and peanut butter has been stable and affordable for years, even as global demand has skyrocketed. In the supply chain for peanuts, what's good for farmers is good for consumers. Changing the peanut program would have detrimental consequences for not only family-run farms like my own, but also rural communities across the Southeast. It would also threaten the availability of a healthy and nutritious energy source for billions of peanut lovers around the world. Currently, Georgia agriculture is really struggling because of low commodity prices and high input costs.
2 minutes.
But the current peanut program is helping most farmers, and without it, many farmers would already be insolvent. On behalf of American peanut farmers, please protect the peanut program and the 2018 Farm Bill. Thank you for your time and your consideration. I look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Joe.
Caroline Villanueva and Dan Canfield.
Next slide, 5-2. thank you, Chairman Conway. Thank you, Chairman Conway and your staff for defending the U.S. sugar industry during the negotiation of new suspension agreements with Mexico. There are 12,500 jobs in Florida that are dependent on the sugar industry. The chairman, ranking member, and Florida members attending today were effective to make the outcome of the negotiations more fair. We request that members of Congress, one, remain vigilant, to help the U.S. government enforce the new sugar agreements, and two, pass a new farm bill that leaves sugar policy intact. Many opponents of sugar policy plan to offer amendments to reform sugar policy when the farm bill is debated. Their ideas of reform could lead us to lose thousands of U.S. sugar industry jobs. I remind you that the new agreements with Mexico are intended to work in tandem with the Farm Bill. This is not a time to toy with the sugar policy on the heels of a serious attempt to stop Mexico's sugar trade violations. The Hawaii sugar farmers went out of business in December of last year after more than 140 years of production. Sugar policy doesn't guarantee us a profit, and it won't keep us in business when foreign governments are willing to spend money propping up their sugar industries. Farmers need farm bill programs and policies that work for their crops, and in Florida, we grow many different types of crops. We hope that all farmers can come together to help you pass a farm bill next year. Please let us know what we can do to help you be successful, and thank you for coming with us to visit with us today.
Three issues: the American nutrient criteria, fish, and money. I am a professor at the University of Florida. I work on management nutrients in aquatic systems. I came here in 1979 to work on that issue because the story was emerging in this country that agriculture was the worst polluter of American lakes after we took out our sewage plants. Despite evidence which I gave to my political leaders that agriculture was not the problem, they had a fear factor that they could not take the risk and they had to control nutrients. Since 1979, we in Florida have spent billions of dollars under nutrient control. We have put farmers out of business. We have made the expense of farming go up. We have done a lot of different things. It's all failed. Not one lake has been restored in all this time. U.S. EPA came in and said, the problem is we haven't done enough. Now we have numeric nutrient criteria, which are going to be passed along the whole country. Numeric nutrient criteria are designed by EPA to give us nice, clear mountain lakes. They're going to fail because they fail to take into account geology and soils. And by that, you're going to have a problem because I think as farmers know, you don't farm on rock. You farm in rich soils. So we're going to violate things. We now have plenty of evidence developing that our lakes have not been changed even by intensive agriculture that much. And so it is a misnomer. Now, what can Ag Committee do? Go to your one system that has worked over the years, the Soil Conservation Service, or whatever they call them now. We built ponds to trap sediments. Those ponds have now filled up. They can't hold the water. help our farmers take those ponds back to original configurations, deepen them. Our oil, gas, and coal industries have now given us very simple mechanical devices that the farmer can put on his property, use his pumps, his tractors, and move his soil that's eroded back up onto his land.
2 minutes.
And it will make a tremendous difference. Fish, I got to change that. Fish. That was our number one agricultural crop traditionally. We have to get into a process of domestication of our fish. Natural fish, I mean native fish, and the exotic, sturgeon. The rules and regs are killing us. Aquaculture can make it big time here. We just need a little help on things. Money. I'm going to get mad, get my university mad at me. Overhead is way too high. Paperwork is too burdensome. Send the money to the state ag commissions. Our ag commission has a 25% overhead rate, which is all these administrators need. Get the money back to the people on the ground, the researchers. Put an additional 12%, we're around 47%, let's say, right now. Put 12% back into the researchers, and then put 10% into paying off our national debt, which is going to kill us all eventually. Thank you.
Sir, before you leave the microphone, I wonder if you would make a promise to share with us your research on the erosion and geographic data, the soil data. Can you send that to our committee?
I can send EPA data that we've analyzed for you, looking at paleoclimatological data.
In keeping with time, these next two individuals, I believe, unless there's another group, will be our last two. We still have several cards, and I apologize not to be able to get to everybody today. But Steve and Dix and Matt Coley.
I'm Matt Coley. I'm a fourth-generation cotton and peanut farmer from Vina, Georgia. And since 1945, my family has also owned and operated a cotton gin and peanut buying point. Appreciate the committee and the members coming down here. It shows us how important agriculture is to you, because you know how important it is to us. In the cotton industry, we've been facing some difficult times, and you all have been supporting us and helping us trying to find a solution before we get to this next farm bill, and we can't thank you enough for that help. What I want to talk about today is conservation programs. As commodity prices have dipped, conservation programs have become a bigger part of my operation. That cost share money we get through EQIP and CSP program, it's allowed us to make ends meet some years. And you know, I just encourage y'all to continue those programs in this next farm bill, because not only does it improve on the environment and the productivity on our farm, but it leaves the farm in a better place for the next generation. There is one issue with CSP that I hope that y'all will be able to address, and that evolves around the system award management number and the DUNS number that you have to be able to participate in the program. Several farmers in my area this past year in particular, their payments, cost share payments were delayed over 6 months because of issues with the DUNS number and the SAM number. So I think from what I understand, it wasn't ever the intention of these NRCS cost share programs having to go through the SAM requirements, and hopefully y'all will be able to address that issue in this next formula. It's just a burdensome requirement that you have to redo it every year, and I get about 800 spam emails a day wanting to help you with my government contracts, and far from a government contractor. But thank you again for your time down here and all you do for agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Stephen Dix. I'm a fifth-generation Floridian from Lake City, which is just slightly north of here. My concern today is with the adequate funding of USDA rural development. Rural development plays an important role in all of your districts, not just in North Florida, South Georgia. As I travel around the countryside, I see a lot of rural communities that are dying. Those communities need the infrastructure. They need the facilities that can be produced with the money from the USDA rural development. And yet I read in the proposed budget that's coming out that there's a big cut especially in the water and sewer program. The water and sewer program is one of the best programs the USDA Rural Development has ever had. The Rural Utility Service, as my friend Derek Thomas spoke about earlier, that's under the USDA Rural Development. We do not need to cut USDA Rural Development. We need to increase it. There are certain programs that maybe could be merged or modified, but the bulk of the programs, over 40-some-odd programs, need to be funded and adequately funded in the new Farm Bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Wrapping up, I know that not everyone got a chance to speak this morning. There's probably another 30 cards here. This is a topic, of course, very near and dear to your hearts. I would definitely recommend that those who didn't get a chance to speak to go to House Ag Listens at mail.house.gov. Chairman Conway.
Well, thanks, Dr. Telg. I appreciate that. Thank each and every one of you for being here this morning and sitting here and listening to each other and helping us understand exactly your perspective on what we should do. Apparently, we have a little audio-visual thing or something. The 18 Farm Bill is a work in progress, and the work we did this morning will fold into that. The work you did helping to present to us will fold into that Farm Bill to make sure that we get it as right as we can. I think, just quickly, you touched on just about every single aspect of the Farm Bill was mentioned in some form or fashion today. Support for some things, support for other things, and want necessary changes. And we certainly appreciate, all of us on the committee do that, certainly appreciate that very much. The problem we've got, of course, is that you're preaching to the choir. My guess is I've got every one of the votes at this table will vote for the Farm Bill. I've got to have a few more votes than that to get that done. There's some 70 members of Congress who represent rural America, which means there are 360 that don't. And that's where all the votes are. So I'm pretty sure I got the votes of most production agriculture folks, and I'm pretty sure I got the votes of most SNAP folks. But I need that bigger group that benefits from the Farm Bill, and that's every single person out there who eats every day. They should be in favor of a strong Farm Bill. And the reason is that you and your colleagues across this country provide us, the eaters, with the most abundant and safest and affordable food and fiber supply of any developed nation in the world. This is a pocketbook issue back home. Every time somebody goes to a grocery store, every time they go to a restaurant, they get a deal. They get a bargain. They don't know it, and they certainly don't know why. Well, I'm deputizing every single one of you in the room today to be a part of that communication system that helps the American eater, the American consumer, understand the really good deal that they get every time they take advantage of the food and fiber that you produce. We have to tell your story. You've got a great story to tell. You have to tell it over and over and over till you're sick of telling it, and then you got to tell it four or five more times, and you'll break through. Here's the family that I'm going to be most concerned about when we do the Farm Bill, and here's the statistic. The top 20% of the income earners in this country, in other words, if you broke the income earners into five brackets, the top 20% spend more on food than the bottom 20% makes. Just let that soak in. That's who I'm worried about. That folks in the bottom half of the economic food chain, that's who we need to be concerned with. The high-end folks that don't really care what the food costs are, God bless them, good for them, terrific. But I'm worried about that mom who's making her ends meet paycheck to paycheck and her ability to feed her family. Her food bill is where she flexes each week, each month. If the car payment doesn't change, the house payment doesn't change, rent doesn't change, if something comes up in the middle of the month, it comes out of her food budget. And why on earth would we affect foreign policy at the national level that would drive her food costs higher? The example is GMO labeling. If we hadn't fixed that, then estimates were that it would cost every family in America about $1,000 a year to fix it. Well, most of the folks, you could put $80 a month on your food bill, and you probably wouldn't even know it. But that mom working paycheck to paycheck knows it. Let's talk about that food stamp family. They're getting about $520 a month for food stamps. You add another $80 a month to their cost of their food just because of a label. Not new food, not better food, just a label. Well, as we go about this work, that's who we've got to keep in mind every time we make a decision, and that is, what does it do to the cost of food for American consumers? Because right now, it's not a national security issue, but it's a monster pocketbook issue that we've got to make sure we protect. In closing, let me switch gears a little bit. We'll celebrate the 230th anniversary of our Constitution this year, that document which we live under and proudly serve under. Most of us who've served in the Army or in these offices have taken an oath to protect that Constitution. Our framers were in Philadelphia this month, 230 years ago, in the heat. The windows were nailed shut from the outside because they were trying to do something pretty radical, and they created that Constitution. When Benjamin Franklin emerged from that, a woman asked him, "What have you given us, good doctor, a monarchy or a republic?" And he said, "Madam, a republic if you can keep it." For 230 years, good Americans, just like everybody in this room, have kept this republic. Only a self-governing people can protect a republic. And John Adams said, only a moral and religious people can self-govern. As I look around our country today, I'm worried that we're losing the moral high ground. We're losing the moral authority to, in fact, self-govern. We all ask God to bless this country, and we mean it. Next time you hear somebody sing God Bless America or hear that invoked, ask yourself, what is it we're asking God to bless? Look at it from God's perspective. What's going on in this country that's blessable day in and day out? There are lots of things going out there. We've killed 57 million babies in 43 years. We've coarsened up our society. We've accepted language into the normal course of events that it's vulgar and no longer appropriate. Stuff comes out of Hollywood that should embarrass all of us, and we deify the folks who put that on. The nuclear family is breaking up and the impact that has on the moral compasses of children. God can't bless a nation that's on that path. So the bigger question is, what do I do to fix it? This isn't a group effort. This is my effort, your effort. We can't legislate it. It's got to be done one person by them at a time making it up. You got to live a code. I live the Judeo-Christian model. Jesus Christ is my personal Savior. I try to live His tenets every single day, and some days I'm better at than others. But you have to live a code as well. You and your family, your neighborhood, community, state, all of us have those concentric rings of influence where every day we have to be about the hard, arduous task of reclaiming the moral high ground, of defending those principles that this country was built on, protecting those values that have allowed us to sustain this republic for 230 years. It's a republic, madam, if you can keep it. Every one of you are keepers. Let's be worthy of that task. God bless each one of you. God bless Texas. And God bless the United States of America.